Recording in progress.
Good morning, honorable members, the community secretaries, the media, and the management and leadership of the Department of Transport and its entity. Allow me to take this opportunity to formally welcome this meeting on behalf of my co-chair, Honorable Zwane. This is a meeting of the committee of transport, both the select committee and the portfolio committee, to receive briefings from the Department of Transport and Road Accident Fund on its APP. So having said that, let's get a sense from the committee secretaries as to whether there are any apologies to be presented to the meeting. Over to you, Fubena. You are muted.
Sorry, Chair. My apology. From the select committee, apologies that we have received with its apology for Honorable Django. We've got also two standing apology for Honorable Lansman and Honorable Mathebula. Thank you, Chairperson. Let me pass to my colleague in the portfolio committee, Valerie.
What is Valerie?
Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning, members and delegates from the department. There were no apologies from the members in the Portfolio Committee on Transport. And Chairperson, can I just add that Mr. Zwane has rejoined the meeting now. We've just admitted him again.
Thank you. We will just also bring it to the attention of the meeting that three members will be joining us in due process, probably from 10. Honorable Mushuri and Honorable Bosho.
Honorable Chair?
Yes.
Hey, I'm struggling. This KP Sitola, I'm struggling here. My network is bad. Sometimes I can be out from the meeting. I don't know when, but my network is struggling.
It is noted. What we will then do will then check with the portfolio committee chair, Honorable Zwane. Any opening remarks from your side?
Chair, thank you. Thank you very much. I do want to say that your opening remarks have actually sufficiently covered the purpose of today, because this is run as a joint meeting. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, for those words. We will then, without any waste of time, having heard that the department has agreed that we start with the Road Accident Fund APP because of the commitment that I believe that they might have, RAF might have brought it to the attention of the DG. Allow the board chair to just give the opening remarks and then hand over to the Road Accident Fund CEO to present its APP.
Chairperson?
Yes.
The minister is on the platform, so I think
my humble honorable minister, how are you? Can you give over to the honorable minister to give the opening remarks? Do we have the deputy minister?
Okay, I am around, but the minister is linked. I don't know whether there's a problem.
Okay, yeah. So what is the DM suggesting? We start.
Let me check.
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you, Senior Honorable Minister. My apologies.
The problem is that we attend too many meetings, so I was in the cabinet committee, so we had to be to...
Thank you, Minister. And, let me hand it over to you for the opening remarks. Honorable Minister? DM? You said the minister is there.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. And Chairperson of the Select Committee and the Deputy Minister, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee and Select Committee and Acting Director General, Mr. Mthunzi Madia. The strategic plan we presented in the last financial year has been revised to ensure tighter alignment to the medium-term strategic framework and our service delivery obligations. The annual performance plan is an instrument through which these obligations are given expression through quarterly and annual targets. We have been emphatic that our approach to service delivery cannot continue with the same approach that has not delivered tangible results in the past. The electoral mandate of the sixth administration is premised on the Kaoleza ethos, which requires that we inculcate a culture of accelerated service delivery by moving at a brisker pace in delivering services. A paradigm shift is a necessary condition towards delivering tangible outcomes that citizens can see, feel, and experience. In 2019, we identified ministerial priorities that define the change agenda, which must coexist alongside the sustained agenda. Over the last 2 years, we have put in place building blocks to give momentum to this change agenda. We are now poised to give this agenda traction and ensure tangible groundbreaking progress is achieved. The realization of the 25% reduction to road fatalities measured against the 2019 baseline requires a paradigm shift and creative solutions that move the needle. Road safety campaigns and communication are an important element of our interventions. We have defined the respective roles of our road entities in arresting the carnage on our roads. This ranges from engineering solutions that SANRAL will deliver to coordinated law enforcement by RTMC. Provincial and municipal traffic and metro police and the adjudication by RTA. Our road safety messaging will morph into a more effective instrument that is able to sustain itself through the year rather than on holiday peaks. The Road Accident Fund remains a critical pillar in creating a safety net for those whose lives are irreversibly impacted on by crashes on our roads. The 2019-20 was the final year of the 2015-2020 strategic plan. This period was characterized by very serious operational and financial sustainability challenges, which was as a result of a flawed operating model. The operating model neglected the expeditious investigation and settlement of claims, which is the core mandate of the fund, and focused on using litigation to manage its short-term liquidity challenges. This was enabled through the implementation of a defense panel of attorneys model. The new operating model has sought to change this by focusing on settlement of claims with 120 days and implementing strategic initiatives aimed at improving operational and financial sustainability of the fund. A number of significant strides were made by the RAF during the first 2 years of the 2020-2025 RAF strategic plan. This includes finalization and approval of the new operating model. In terms of this model, focusing on optimizing claims administration by improving investigation and settlement of claims. This will result in expedited settlement of claims and avoid unnecessary litigation. The RAF medical tariffs have been developed and published for comment. The board has reviewed and approved the new macro organizational structure, which is aligned with the new strategy. The 365-day action agenda will be given impetus and will come alive and serve as a platform to ignite the imagined approach to safety and security in the sector. We have refined our targets such that they enable us to achieve tangible outcomes. This ranges from ensuring that all provinces finalize the classification of traffic policing as a 24-hour, 7-day job, to achieving a 14-day turnaround time for the issuing of driver's license cards. Addressing the challenges relating to driver's license value chain remains an important part of improving the quality of service we render to motorists. The rationalization of road traffic entities premised on a sound business case aimed at maximizing efficiencies, combating corruption, and strengthening law enforcement will receive attention. In the same vein, the process to replace the current driving license card with a new card that meets international standards will get underway once Cabinet grants approval. This will require procurement of new equipment as we decommission the current machine that has been in operation since 1998. Rolling out a new service delivery model for driving license testing centers will gain momentum through a collaborative effort by all three spheres of government. The state of repair of the provincial and municipal road networks remains a source of serious concern. The devastation and damage to road infrastructure brought about by recent floods has shown the spotlight on the urgent need to find a more sustainable way of funding the secondary and tertiary road networks. While the provincial road maintenance grant augments the funding provided by provinces through their equitable share allocation, this remains a far cry from what is required to address the current backlog. Through the Siamba Sonke program, we have identified creative ways to support provinces and tackle rural roads using alternative technologies such as block paving. This year, we will be establishing a project management unit that will provide support to provinces to tackle the road construction and maintenance backlog and serve as a repository of project management expertise. Through this unit, we will ensure that funding is utilized for its intended purpose and that projects are delivered on time at reasonable cost. The quality of public transport services has an immediate impact on the citizens as it touches the daily lives of millions of South Africans who rely on it for their livelihood. Giving effect to the white paper vision of an efficient, affordable, safe, and reliable public transport system can only be realized through systematic interventions that deliver tangible outcomes incrementally. We remain on course to implement the resolutions of the 2020 National Taxi Lekgotla will therefore ensure that the implementation of key interventions agreed with the industry will find prominence in our 2022-2023 annual performance plan. Igniting the taxi economy as a critical pillar of the sector's contribution to economic reconstruction and recovery will be tackled at a brisker pace. This is a critical driver of our economic interventions that will accelerate the formalization of the industry. We are committed to reimagine the taxi recapitalization program and position it as an enabler of economic participation and unlocking the taxi economy. Our strategic plan emphasizes the implementation of the integrated public transport networks that enable a seamless movement of public transport users across modes. The user experience will be enhanced by the rollout of a cashless fare system and integrated ticketing. In 2020-2021, the cities of Umsunduzi, Mbombela and Buffalo were suspended from the grant due to years of slow implementation and lack of technical capacity. It is in the interest of citizens in these cities that we work tirelessly to get these cities back onto the program. We'll mobilize technical capacities to address the challenges that led them to being removed from the IPTN grant and assist them in meeting the conditions imposed by the National Treasury for their readmission. In order to obviate a recurrence of this situation, we have tightened our monitoring of the use of conditional grants by provinces and municipalities, such that we are able to directly intervene when a city or a province fails to implement an executive obligation. The infrastructure build program remains critical to economic recovery and growing the transport sector's contribution to the GDP. Tangible progress in this program will be given impetus by the public transport funding model, which also takes due regard of the infrastructure requirements to enable mobility across all modes. A key tenet of the funding model is a new subsidy policy that acknowledges the role of taxi industry in the public transport system. We remain on course with the task of returning to service the 10 priority commuter rail corridors, which we committed to restore by the end of this calendar year. In building technical capacity for entities such as PRASA to tackle its capital program more efficiently, we have committed to creating a platform that will enable our entities to share technical and engineering capabilities and expertise. Transport is one of the main contributors to greenhouse gases and is expected to play a key role in advancing interventions that not only seek to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, but to also protect the environment. The movement of bulk freight on the road not only increases emissions, but also damages the road's infrastructure and significantly reduces their economic life. While the volume of cargo by rail has declined in the last year, we will work with the industry to find creative solutions that will enable us to effect a meaningful migration of significant volumes of cargo from road to rail. The revised strategic plan and annual performance plan for 2022-2023 of the department have been aligned to the National Development Plan, the medium-term strategic framework, and the performance agreement I signed with the president. This alignment was achieved through creation of a line of sight between the department, our SOEs, and provinces in terms of delivery of outcomes, outputs, and targets. To that effect, consolidated indicators with which the department tracks selected performance of SOEs and provinces are included in the plans and will be reported on every quarter. In conclusion, I am confident that the implementation of the revised strategic plan 2022-23 APP will serve to entrench the transformation journey of the sector. In relation to the RAF, I have no doubt that the biggest beneficiary of transformation of RAF will be the thousands of claimants who fall victim to motor vehicle accidents on our roads. With your permission, Chairperson, the Acting Director General will lead the presentation on the revised Strat Plan 2020-2025 and the Annual Performance Plan for 2022-2023. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Minister, for the overview in terms of changes that that took place since we last met, particularly with regard the issue around destruction of rail infrastructure, movement of cargo from road to rail, the road accident fund, progress made around that. We at least we get a sense in terms of where we are going. Without any waste of time, let me then hand over to the acting DG. It has brought my attention, but I'm in your hands, acting DG, in terms of the sequence of presentation. Over to you.
Good morning, Chair of Co-Chairs, Honorable Minister, and Honorable Deputy Minister, esteemed members of the Select Committee, as well as the Portfolio Committee. The initial statement that you made that RAF will present first, and then the department will come after RAF has presented. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Acting DG, over to Ralph. We have the board chair, and the board chair let's lead the discussion.
Thank you, Honorable Chairpersons and Honorable Members. I will just introduce our delegation, and then I will hand over to the CEO to present. My name is Kendin Sibi. I am the chair of the board. Together with me is Dr. Mabuya, who is the deputy chair, and we have the CEO, Mr. Letswalo, together with the CFO, Ms. Bokgitse, and Mr. Lekgwareni, the acting chief strategy, and Ms. Manyasa, the acting chief relationship and stakeholder officer. I will then hand over to the CEO to take us through the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Over to you, CEO. Do we have the CEO online?
Yes, Chair. My apologies. Technology seems to be failing me this morning. I hope that we'll be able to complete this presentation without any glitches, however. My name is Collins Little. I'm the CEO of the Road Accident Fund. Thanks, Minister. Thanks to Chair and members. Mine is to present the 2023 strategic plan or APP of the Road Accident Fund. I think the first issue, Chair, is to just paint a picture about what the Road Accident Fund is and what were the challenges, and of course give you a sense of where we are, and then we'll then go over to the presentation. I'll do the presentation on the APP, and our CFO, Mr. Potkitar, will then deal with the issues around the budget going forward. I think, Patu, can you just give us the slides, Ompo? Chair, as they are going through that, I think the most important aspect is to really look at the Road Accident Fund as we found it in 2019. It was an organization plugged by mainly two big things. One is the ever increasing actuarial liability of about 300 billion. Then, of course, we had a what we call the RNYP, which is requested but not yet paid, which is a short-term debt of about 19.7 billion that we had over the period. And it had been increasing exponentially. The challenge that we had was that we were foreseeing that in the next years, I think it was set by 2027, the actuarial liability would have grown from the 300 billion it was at that time to about 900 billion. And that RAF will effectively collapse if something was not done about it. And then we had to start in earnest the process of trying to understand those two liabilities, why they were growing as they were growing. But the issues around the liquidity of the RAF. At that time, assets of RAF were being attached on a daily basis by various plaintiff attorneys because of this short-term liability. I don't know, Chair, whether why we can't get the presentation through, whether... Can I...
Let's check with the committee
secretary. Chairperson, can I get the names of the people from RAF? For the only name that was given was only for the CEO. So those are the officials so that I can grant them presenting rights quickly. Who are they?
It's Mpoma Nyasha and Patul Kwareni.
Yes, you can continue, CEO Wal Mpo Manyasha.
Yes. We looked at the cost. What we picked up, Chair, was that at that point, we had about 43 billion that we collect each and every year. And the amount that was paid to claimants was only 26 billion out of that 43 billion. The 17 billion actually went to what is called administrative costs. Administrative costs are costs associated with actually paying out the compensation, as expected in Section 3 of our Act, to claimants. 10.6 billion of the 17 billion, Chair, went to lawyers in terms of legal costs. And of course, there were big amounts, like 180 million of that in every year. As part of the 17 billion was going to actuarial services, which just merely calculated our loss of support and loss of earnings. And of course, we had about 200 million a year on assessor costs. So these are people that would go and find out whether the accident has happened. No investigations were being done. One of the biggest issues that we had was that in terms of Section 22 as well, there's an expectation that once an accident happens, the driver or the owner of the motor vehicle was supposed to report within 14 days to RAF on that, to say, I have had an accident in my car. These were the people involved, either injured or killed as a result. And that was supposed to come to RAF. I must happen to add, Chair, that nothing really came forward regarding that Section 22. So there was no adherence to that. Consequently, we faced issues around corruption simply because a person could actually slip and fall in their kitchen and they would claim from RAF simply because there was nothing, there's no nexus between whether that was as a result of an accident or not, and that was supposed to come from the drivers and the owners. So, Chair, we had that as an issue, and the simple marching orders from the minister were that go and make sure that you reduce that liability, investigate that liability, find out what's going on in that liability, investigate the liability, but also in the process, just make sure that you deal with the issue of the short-term liability. We were faced with a thing called day zero, meaning the day on which our attachments were going to be equivalent to the money we get from the fuel levy, which was 3.6 billion. At the time we started this process, we had this amount at 1.7 billion. And that for us was a concern that we had to also deal with. A couple of things that emerged out of that was that we then formulated a strategic plan that we would see how we deal with it. So the long and short of it, Chair, I'll take this presentation as a read, but I'll just touch on the salient points of it. We just want to give you a socioeconomic impact of RAF. We dispense, in the past financial year, we dispensed about 48 billion out there, which we collected over the period, and 10.5 billion we spent on what is called general damages. And of course, we spent about 446 million on medical expenses over that period. But what you can see is that we have paid about 34.2 billion in terms of this personal claims that people are claiming. So the long and short of it is that the RAF contribution to the socioeconomic impact of South Africa runs about 48 billion a year, which is something that we are managing. But simply, Chair, there is also no nexus between the levy that one pays and the amount of cover that we provide for that person should he be involved in an accident that would lead to an injury where people are injured. As a consequence of that, we always have money that we're paying out more than what we are receiving. Of course, there are issues of efficiencies, as I said. The claimant gets only about 40% of that amount. If you also deduct out of the 60%, the 25% that they usually pay to the lawyers in terms of Section 19C of the Act. Next slide. Yeah, Chair, just a vision and mission. We have to change this. We changed it to be an equitable and sustainable compensation system for motor vehicle accidents. Equitable in a sense that whether you approach us, and where you come from, it should be the same. If the accident that happened, you should receive an equitable treatment and responsible amount regardless of where you come from and the background. But the other issue around equitability was also which law firm you were coming from, because in most instances, the big law firms were the ones that were actually making more money for their claimants, in a sense that they were also treated, that they were paid first more than anyone else in the system of payment, which we found to be inequitable. And of course, sustainable, in a sense that we should continue to pay what you require. We must not overpay. We must not underpay you, depending on circumstances. And that this sustainable issue was also the issue around the liquidity and being able to match that. Here, Chair, we have a problem of asset and liability mismatch, in the sense that we receive our money on an annuity basis, which is each and every month from the fuel levy. However, we pay monies out in lump sums, which may well cover a situation where someone gets injured at 40 and we pay them the lump sum that will cover them from the age of 40 until retirement age of 65, which to us remains a problem and it's something that we must deal with. This, Chair, also is perpetuated by provisions of the Act in terms of Section 17.4b, which says that we are allowed to pay in installments, but it then says as agreed upon. The lawyers never agree with us to actually be paid in installments, and we know from the background that we have that most of these people will actually get paid the money, but they would actually spend this money within 2 years of receiving it, coming back to the social net after that, and then claiming money from SASSA and other institutions of the state. So we want to make sure that sustainable compensation system for motor vehicles becomes the vision of what we want to see. And our mission is to provide appropriate benefits. We are saying appropriate benefits, Chair, because we still believe very strongly that general damages is not appropriate for the circumstances. If you have been paid loss of support or loss of earnings, or you have been reimbursed your medical costs, we don't understand why there's still a thing called general damages that was supposed to have been dealt with in 2008, but it looks like that part of the amendment did not help much if you look at the amount of money that we are still paying in terms of general damages. It is an area where most of the time we struggle to settle because it's not very clear what we are paying for in that regard. So for qualifying road users, meaning people that got injured on roads and not people that would have been assaulted and all that from the corruption that we get, that we see in the space. But the most important aspect that the ministers also referred to is the support of safe use of our roads. We think that we need to get more involved in that area of safe road users to ensure that our people are safe so they don't have to claim from the scheme. Now, we buttress this on the basis of what we call our core values. We know that we are the most defrauded system in the whole of South Africa, if not one of the most defrauded systems in the whole of the world. We then say integrity needs to be something that we pride ourselves with, because for people to defraud us, most of the time they work with ourselves within, or some of us within the Road Accident Fund. So integrity is one of the most key pillars of our core values that we want to espouse as we move with this vision and mission. Compassion, we must treat our people with compassion. The people that come to us is because they want help, and as a consequence, we must make sure that we express that compassion. Accountability, we must continue to be accountable in what we do and treat all people with respect. And of course, in the process, make sure that we do all this with excellence. And you would see, Chair, as we go and present what we have done so far. Next slide. I want to try to move quickly, Chair, because some of this I have already alluded to. And I'll take the presentation as read. Next slide. We are just indicating what we were dealing with and a runaway liability. If you look at 2008-09, we're sitting below 50 billion of the actuarial liability. And of course, over this period, you'd see that it increased to above 300 billion when we got this. And for us and the minister, that was a worrisome thing, that there's exponential growth as you see it. And you'd see that that projection was actually going to increase. We'll show you what we are seeing in the other outlying years. But you'd see that this amount has been growing over a period from 42.5 billion to about 315.8 billion in 1920. And this is the situation that we found. And the view was that there must be something that is done out of this. Otherwise, this will actually collapse the whole system of South Africa, because we tended to be known as the biggest liability after ESCOM. And for the department and South Africa, it was not going to be, it was a lying giant that was going to collapse us at some point. So something was supposed to be done. The next slide. Here, Chair, that's also a point at which you would see that there is a thing called requested but not yet paid amount, meaning there would not have the money. You have settled the claim, but RAF does not have the money. And you'd see that the projected amount was going to grow to about 23 billion in the 2020 financial year, as you look at it. And you'd see that the RNYP amount has been lowering there, but the view was that projected over time it was going to grow. And that's why ultimately it was something that we needed to do something about. And this is the part, Chair, where people would come and attach our chairs, they would come and attach our bank accounts as we were working towards. And this number of attachments was growing. The next slide. This you would see, Chair, that also the administrative cost effect was that as we were doing all this, administrative costs were growing exponentially. And most of this administrative cost, as I said, it was driven mostly by legal costs. We were just seeking for touch, Chair. When we received a claim, we never really looked at it at the Road Accident Fund. We would actually wait for a time when someone's are issued. It's then that we would actually then take this thing to our attorneys, who will then defend this matter that could have easily been settled in terms of the law, as provided for in Section 24. But what we would have done is that we would wait for actually the day on which the court would actually sit, and on that day is then that day that you would then get an offer from us saying we are settling this claim. Of course, this came with a 10.6 billion legal cost bill that we had to pay out of the 43 billion each year, which made this thing unsustainable. Next slide. The administrative cost effect, Chair, I've already talked about the outsourcing. We then had actuarial studies that were outsourced. Looking at it, Chair, we had about 18,000 calculations that were done, either for loss of support or loss of tenants. and we are paying 181 million for that every year. That will tell you that it was costing us about 10,000 per calculation, which was quite absurd, and that's something that we had to deal with. The other aspect was that there was no investigation that was done on this claim. In most instances, the assessors were used by our merit assessors to actually go and collect more information, because most of the, at least 90% of all claims that come to us do not have the minimum requirements for us to be able to make an offer at all. And we'll show you what we have done in that regard. And of course, RAF was paying much more for medical costs as it were. Out of that 300 billion that you had, you'd see that 17 billion of that was going to go to medical costs, and at about 5 times the cost of what the medical aid is paid for each and every procedure. As a consequence of a constitutional court decision in 2013 that came and said that we must have our own medical tariffs if we wanted to do that, and with pre-authorization. We can't say to a person, once you have already incurred this cost, we are not going to be able to pay you because you have overpaid. That was the first part. But also, we are being hit with all the things. It then impacted on the planning, because every time you just receive an invoice saying this is the amount, and you don't know about that invoice because there was no pre-authorization, as other medical service funders would do. And that's what we are trying to do to effect changes within RAF in terms of the new body. Next slide. Then, of course, here we just are showing you the increase in the average claim settlement amounts that are there. What we are just trying to show is that the settlement amount was growing from 2007 in terms of the loss of earnings to 2019. You'd see that this thing has been growing exponentially. And of course, I mean, there would have been a decrease to about just over a billion there, simply because of what we call the effect of COVID. Where, because we are running a manual system, a lot of things have not been brought through, and you would see it in the numbers of each and every institution we had that going forward. But the trend has been going up, and that trend is back to where it was. But except that, we are now starting to see average amounts coming down as we start to investigate these claims going forward. Next slide. Here is the increase in the average claim settlement amounts, and you'd see that in 2007, we paid out on average about 32,000, but it has increased exponentially to about 2019 to about 276. And of course, this you see it is growing over a period, and I think that it also increased to about I think 292 as we speak, simply because now we are having people that are claiming. But here, Chair, it also increased by the fact that public transport passengers were only allowed to claim about only up to 25,000, because there is a thing called public passenger liability insurance that is issued by the private sector to taxis and buses. And I must ask them to add, Chair, that at this point, we have reported this matter to the Financial Service Conduct Authority, that these private sector entities are still actually covering these public passengers, but they have never paid a cent since 2008 out of that money, but they are actually collecting premiums while RAF is paid. So it's something that we have reported. We are waiting for the report of the FSCA about whether that is actually ethical for them to collect that money while RAF continues to pay. Next slide. Then there is the issue around day zero, Chair, where I was saying the issue is about the 3.6 billion that we're receiving each and every month, that the attachments were going to be actually equivalent to that, meaning that we would not have any money to run the road accident fund. We wouldn't have the money to pay anyone else. The money would have just been attached by lawyers. And over a period of time, we have effectively reduced that to zero. If you look at that line, that red line was showing you the number of attachments and how they used to happen. And we are comfortable that those bank attachments are no longer happening anymore, and that we have averted day zero. And we are also reporting that for the first time in the history, we have actually reduced our RNYP to be below 10 billion. And we think that over a period, we'll see it when the CFO will present that we are anticipating that we'll reach an amount of about 3 billion, if not zero, into 2025. Next slide. This also led to duplicate payments. So what lawyers would do, they would simply attach their bank account, pay themselves, and then also because they were on our payment, which is manual, we will pay them not knowing what they were attaching for. And they would get what is called duplicate payments. And in the process of those duplicate payments, they'll just simply go and use those duplicate payments for a purpose for which they were not received instead of paying them back, knowing that they had attached their monies. We then had to report 102 law firms over duplicate payments. And we have collected more than half a billion worth of those duplicate payments from these law firms. And we have reported them to the Legal Practice Council. We must say, Chair, that the Legal Practice Council, we are seeing difficulties in actually ensuring that they act on this unscrupulous lawyers that do this to the fund. And we continue to go back to reconcile, and there's still some other people that owe us. Of course, others have already paid us back this money, but there are still some couple of law firms that still owe us this money as we proceed. So it's something that we are also working on to make sure that they actually pay back this money that they have taken from the fund. Next slide. This is just an equitable payment strategy that we found. At that point, we had things called allocated payments. As we said, most of them were big law firms that would get money. Not that it has changed in any event, but the figures have now reduced because now we are paying the oldest claim first. They are not depending on which law firm it comes from. And you'd see the top 20 law firms that were paid, either for capital or for cost. This will be released each and every quarter just to show South Africans what we are paying out as the road accident. Of course, our payment strategy is no longer based on fixed allocations, and it's no longer skewed to that big law firms because those big law firms themselves had apportioned the money to themselves, and I think it was because they were able to attach our bank account. We also applied to the court to get the 45A suspension of all those so that everyone queues, and then the queue is paid. And that helps us to also stratify our liability to make sure that we pay the oldest debt first. Next slide. The insufficient information, as you said, Chair, we have insufficient information. If you look at this on the audit that we did on our backlog, for instance, you would see that in all regions, especially in the biggest region, in Melane as well, you would see that of all the claims that we looked at, about 94,000 of them or 106,000 of them that we have already audited so far in the backlog, only 8.8 have got all documents that we require to actually make an offer. But 89.26% is missing information. And the other about 1.92% just doesn't have any information at all. The person will just put in a form with no supporting information. This, I must say, is against Section 244 of our Act that says that you should submit a claim with all its particulars. And if it's not submitted with all its particulars, then this claim is not a claim in terms of this Act. But we have not been actively dealing with that. We have not actively dealt with that. But the other part was also Section 22, Chair, where, as I said, within 14 days, a driver or an owner of a motor vehicle must make sure that they see what is called a RAF 3 form that just says, informs RAF that there's an accident, and in that accident there are this many people that are injured, there are this many people that have died, and as a consequence expect that there may be a claim. So it's something that has not been done, and it's something that we are making sure that it needs to be done so that we avoid the issue of corruption as well. Next slide. Here is just a direct claim strategy that we embarked upon. And this direct claim strategy, Chair, was going against Section 19C and making it difficult in terms of Section 24C for people to actually bring claims. And much more of this, Chair, everywhere, were claims that did not have information. So we collected a lot of claims that did not have enough information ourselves as the RAF. And that's why our direct claim strategy had to change to give effect to what the law says and making sure that we give the claimant the amounts that they deserve under the circumstances, but also that the claimant claims, knowing very well that he must be advised properly and all that, and that the RAF system as it sits does not actually support the direct claims effort that we're doing. And we have got a lot of claims that are sitting in a system, consequently, that are dormant. We are trying to get those people, we can't get to them. And in the main, it's because the information is missing for us to even make an offer on those direct claims. Next slide. There's an issue around the tax refund that we are engaging South African Revenue Services on. In terms of the Section 16.1A of the RAF Act, we are exempt from taxation, any form of taxation, and we have actually been talking to the SARS about the 12.6 billion that historically it was due to us, because we are saying that that provision of the RAF Act must come into action. And it says we shall be refunded all taxation that we have been paid. So that's one aspect that we engage in the SARS on as well. Next slide. The other challenges, of course, were issues around instability, where RAF had operated with an interim board for a very long time and an acting chief executive officer and executives for a very long time. And we had an unsustainable model, as we say, that there's no nexus between the revenue and the benefits that we offer. Consequently, and of course, the asset liability mismatch that led to liquidity problems that we were facing at the time. And of course, we operate a very manually based model that works on physical documents. And of course, you see, even with the advent of COVID, that we suffer the most and most entities would suffer, simply because even Section 24, which in our view was supposed to have been a regulation, instead of it being hard-coded in the legislation because it talks about procedures. It means that if we are to change a procedure, we must actually come back to Parliament, which is creating an issue for us as we are trying to navigate the space. It's something that we think that Parliament should help us to ensure that those amendments come through so that we see the benefits of this new model properly. Next slide. I'm just going to go through, Chair, the strategic initiatives. I've already touched on them, a bit of what we have done so far. As I said, reduction of legal costs, review of the operating model, introduction of integrated claims management system, issue regulation enhancing claims judgment process, and of course, the review of the current legislation. These are the marching orders that we receive from the Department of Transport through the Minister as the Executive Authority. Next slide. Of course, these key initiatives and achievements over the last 2 years. So we had this process of engaging with all this, the litigation strategy, we changed it, we abandoned the panel of attorneys, it was a big thing in the market. We have changed this litigation to be more claimant-centric and move to claims administration rather than actually use the court as a way of delaying payments. So it's something that we are proud of, that we have insourced this. We're working together with the Department of Justice, the State Attorney's Office, to make sure that we manage RAF litigation. It has its own teething problems, but so far we are seeing the results of this model. Next one is we also moved away from the model of outsourcing the actuarial function. Of course, it used to cost us 181 million a year. We have insourced it, and that has created a bit of jobs there, but also 51 million per annum, saving us around 130 million, so about. Claims investigation unit, we have established it. It's saving us that billion over 5 years. We think that this must actually be reduced to by about 80%. So we expect that over the period, we would have paid about 200 million instead of paying 1 billion over the 5 years. The medical tariff and treatment protocols, as I said, we are paying 5 times, and we have developed the medical tariffs that have gone out for consultation, and we'll be gazetting them. We were supposed to gazette them at 2021, 2022. We had it's nice glitches here and there, but we are now coming in the first quarter of 2022, 2023 to be doing that. Minimum information requirements. This is an area where we've got a big pushback from lawyers, because they simply want to dump us with claims that are incomplete. And this is where the big fight is going to be. But we have got the minimum information requirements, regulations that we're going to be issuing, and we are going to be changing our forms to align to that so that we receive these things, we are able to deal with them within 60 days as provided for in terms of Section 24.5 to give an effect of whether the validation and verification has been done. And of course, in terms of 24.6, within 120 days, be able to give someone an offer, in which case the person will decide whether to accept the offer or not. As I said, 95% of all these claims anyway result in a settlement, and they don't actually go to court and require a judge to look at, and which is why we are saying this model must work. We included a bit of mediation, the pilot has been finalized, and in that regard, we'll be doing that. In terms of the regulations as well, we'll be requesting the minister to issue regulations in terms of Section 24, 26, in which case we will be dealing with issues around ensuring that we resolution of dispute is done without people physically going to court. So that's another area that we are going to make sure that it happens, so that we don't have the situation where people just take us to court willy-nilly. And of course, the average age of the RAF claim, because it was not yet paid, we have reduced it from 180 days to 120 days, meaning that instead of paying people in 6 months' time, we are now paying them in 4 months' time, and we are bringing that down. As I said, we are sitting at about 9.5 billion of the requested but not yet paid. The highest was in December 2019 when we were sitting at about 19.7 billion. So we have actually halved that in 2 years. Next slide. Of course, the key initiatives here, we were supposed to go to the market and try to fund this, but we have since abandoned that strategy because our view is that we do not need that money going forward. If you look at RAF, we did not get an increase this year. We would be screaming going back to the National Treasury asking for more funds. If that was the case, to say, please bail us out, we are not in that position anymore. And that's why we are saying we have actually turned around the RAF. We've got a permanent board and a CEO that were appointed in December 2019 and August 2020 respectively. And of course, part of the transformation is includes the organizational structure and comprehensive skills audit that we have done, and of course the production of the new operating model that we are currently operating. The micro organizational structures have now been finalized, and we have onboarded a partner for the integrated case management system that will be implemented in this year. That will help us using artificial intelligence to actually issue out what we call settlements. So our settlements are going to be done using a system rather than individuals. That will also help us reduce issues of duress and undue influence that we have seen that. We have changed our accounting policy chair in line with our mandate. And of course, that has resulted in a dispute between us and the AG regarding that accounting policy. The matter is out in the courts, and we are hopeful that it's an expedited process. I must emphasize, Chair, here that we continue working with the AG. It's just on this issue around the accounting policy that we did with them. We have achieved 78% in the year 2020-2021, and we expect that similar performance, if not slightly better, in the year 2021-2022. Next slide. Now, Chair, I'm just going to show you here, by way of illustration, what this new model is doing. If you look at this graph, it's just showing you that over a period, the liability was projected to increase to at least in this year about 538 billion. But you would see that through our interventions, this is starting to taper off, and you would see that in line with that, even the calculation that is being done currently, you'd see that we are sitting on 350 billion instead of the 455 that was anticipated. That tells you that we are about 100 billion off the mark in terms of trying to reduce liability. So it means that it's actually working, this new strategy that we are on. Next slide. This is just also to show you that the RNYP balance, which is our short-term liability that used to lead to attachments, actually reduced. As I said, the first thing is to note that it is no longer 180 days old or more. In the other years, it was more. In 2020-2021, we reduced it to 180 days. Now it's sitting at 120 days. But the most important aspect is to say we are now sitting at 9.5 billion of this RNYP amount. Instead of we should be sitting at 36.9 billion this year. So it is that distinction between that orange line that goes up that exponentially and that blue line that is showing this is the effect of this new strategy that is starting to work. Next slide.
CEO, can you begin to wrap up?
Yes. Yeah, Chair, I think I'm at the end. I just next slide. This one I've already dealt with, Chair. Next slide. The legal costs I've already dealt with, that they decreased. We're sitting there. Issues of sustainability, liability, financial sustainability, the CFO will deal with. I think that is also touched on. Next slide. That's the APP, Chair. I'm going to take it as a read. Next slide. I'm just going to show you the targets that we have. These are our targets. If you look at 2020-2023, are about that, the RAF business operating model and all those. Next slide. 5, 6, and 7, those are the targets in 2022-2023, which is the last column there of 30%. And our tariffs implemented and 10% reduction in medical costs. Next slide. This is the asset and liability strategy that we're going to implement that we have already started, Chair. Next slide. This is ICMS I've already talked to. Next slide. This is just on the areas of governance where I'm qualified for this with no significant findings are there. Also around response to parliamentary questions and all that. This is just governance and issues around fraud and corruption and our targets there. Next slide. Irregular expenditure as well, we've got targets on that and compliance with debt payment requirement as part of the PFMA. Next slide. This is just stakeholder management and all that. Those are the targets that we have for 2022-2023. Next slide. That's where we are, Chair. I think that's the last target that you are seeing or the approved impact assessment, Chair. What we want to do is just to make sure that notwithstanding the fact that the organization is turning around, we want to see the impact it has on the actual claimants and what happens in South Africa. So I'm going to ask the CFO just to take you over the next 5 minutes on the budget. Thanks, Chair.
Over to you, CEO. I mean, CFO.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair, Honourable Minister, members and colleagues. I am going to be taking you through the next part of the presentation, which is just briefly the budget. And we want to sort of focus on the resultant projections based on the installment payment that we'll be implementing or hopefully fairly shortly. I must state that I've made a couple of adjustments to this particular presentation. In preparing for the presentation, we realized that there were some implications on the claim expenditure line of the installment payments and the reduction of the requested not yet paid, as the CEO had said, that we had not taken into account. So I'm presenting an updated presentation at this point. So just briefly in terms of then the projection for the budgeted income statement, we do indicate there obviously the actuals for 2021. The preliminary actuals for 2022, in which we then indicate a surplus for the year of 1.3 billion. It indicates claims expenditure there of 43 or almost 44 billion and net fuel levies of about 48 billion. It is important to note, Chair, at this point that the budget indicates there a stabilization in terms of the fuel levy and the assumption for that fuel levy is
is no increase on the fuel levy. So it would then obviously be purely implicated by the fluctuations in fuel sold. And then you'll see on investment income that we have quite significant increases in both the 2023 to 2025. And that is as a result of the implementation of the asset and liability matching strategy, and could also be facilitated by the installment payment arrangement. So we would have additional funds available or retain some of the fuel levy, which we could then optimize in terms of investment and also then the resultant additional income stream from that perspective. Then in terms of claims expenditure, as I said, so we'll be implementing installment payments fairly shortly, but we'll also see a reduction in terms of the requested not yet paid, but it will sort of stabilize the expenditure line item in terms of claims expenditure. And then also there an indication of the increase in terms of general expenditure. We've obviously seen an impact in terms of expenditure, that particular expenditure line item in terms of COVID. And our supply chain processes have had sort of a slow uptake in terms of specific items. But as we move forward with the implementation of the strategy, we're hopeful that a lot of the key initiatives such as marketing and ICT expenditure in terms of the implementation of the integrated claims management system would see us spending a bit more in terms of expenditure or general expenses line item 2.3. Next slide. Then we just indicate here the budgeted balance sheet. As you would see, they share the assets landed on actuals of about 11.7 billion at the end of this financial year. The slight reduction in current assets, as you would see, there would be a reduction in the cash on hand, so the cash balances, as we move towards, obviously, as the CEO said, getting our requested not yet paid to below 10 billion and less than 120 days. That current asset is mainly made up of two balances, and that is cash on hand or call account balances, as well as the net fuel levy receivable. So we receive our fuel levies about 2.5 months after. So the current receivable from SARS would then be included as part of that current asset balance. And you will see then the chair that in terms of the implementation of the asset and liability matching, the implementation of the installment payments, it would see a material impact in terms of the cash on hand and the investment balance. And you then see that sort of increase from 2023 being 26 billion to 2025 being 73 billion, which would then be the retention of the fuel levies and being able to invest those funds appropriately and match them with liabilities as they become due. Then in terms of item 2.1, which is current liabilities, and that is mainly made up of the claims liability as well as a bit of trade creditors and others. So you see quite a significant increase in 2023 and then on towards 2025. But that is mainly as a result of the introduction of an additional element on the claims liability being this installment liability that we then would have in terms of the claims liability. We currently only have what the CEO referred to as requested not yet paid, and then the portion of the social benefit liability, which we could reasonably estimate at for recognition purposes. But we'll be introducing that additional element as we move towards introducing installment payments. Next slide. As I said, I think that the most key impact in terms of the new strategy from a finance perspective would be the introduction of installment payments and the effect that it would have on the finances. And I would just like to briefly illustrate it by way of just an effect on the settlements in sort of current years. So we'll obviously we want to enhance our payment plan and our cash management and effectively manage cash and assets to ensure that we make them available when as and when it is required and when these liabilities settle and become available for payment. So if we look at, on average, the RAF settles about 28.6 billion in terms of loss of income and general damages. And the average age of each of these claimants is about 39 years. So obviously, when we do these calculations, there's certain assumptions in terms of the retirement age and then the remaining number of years. So on average, we assume loss of income is paid until the retirement age of 65 and the remaining number of years is 26. So if we settle in terms of annuities over 26 years, we would only need about 1.1 billion per year for 1 year's worth of settlements instead of the current 28.6 billion which becomes payable as a lump sum. So as we settle then for that 39-year-old loss of income on that particular claim, we would have to in any particular year or for the group pay about 28.6 billion loss of income, whereas if we introduce installment payments, we would only be liable for 1.1 in the year and with regards to that particular year. Obviously, it would be an annual payment, so it would be annualized. And we would also be able to perform mortality checks and to obviously stop payments as and when we are able to determine mortality or not. And then we also just indicate there that in terms of the closing balance as of 31st of March of requested not yet paid, 14.9 billion, about 11.8 billion of that balance is loss of income in general damages for compensation. So it does indicate that quite a material portion of the claims that we process and the values in our requested not yet paid, and therefore obviously our claims liability, is made up of loss of income and general damages claims. So we would obviously be able to significantly reduce the cash required or the cash that needs to be available for the payment of these claims if we're able to settle them on an installment basis. And then lastly, we just indicate that if we were able to settle in terms of installments for the 11.8 billion that forms part of the requested or form part of the requested not yet paid as of 31st of March 2021, we would only require about 562 million for payments in the 2020-2021 financial year instead of the 11.8 billion, which is currently or was at that point currently considered overdue. So it just gives you a sort of an indication of the implications from a cash perspective if we were able to settle on an installment basis. Next slide. So here we just give you another a brief synopsis of our balances or our payments and settlements in terms of claims in the 2019 year. And the implication of the installment payments or annuity payments on those numbers. So you'll see there that we sort of break down settlements in terms of the 2019 financial year. You'll see there's about 42.6 million worth of settlements in that particular year. And then we indicate there that if we were able to implement installment payments, the first three, bringing us to a total of 28.6 billion, we would be able to settle on an installment basis. We then indicate that the annuity payments for those three types of claims would be about 1.1. And then we have, if we take our fixed payments, our administration costs, it brings us up to a total of 17.7 billion in payments for that particular year. that versus our fuel levy for that year being 43.2, it would result in cash available for investment in that year of 25.4 billion. So it sort of gives you an idea that, you know, if we're able to retain that sort of funds in terms of what we receive from the fuel levy, we should be able to make material investments and generate that additional portion of investment returns, and also manage our funds to be able to settle claims as and when they become due for payment. Next slide. So yeah, what we're just trying to illustrate is obviously the average payments of for these types of claims. For loss of earnings claims for miners obviously carry a higher average than obviously for the greater than 45 year olds, because their life expectancy is quite a bit longer. But as the CEO had said, I mean, the considerations at that point is quite open, and it's very difficult for you to be able to determine within at that point what the loss of earnings of that particular individual would be. And I mean, we've seen in the past that there's, a lot of, or in terms of the findings from a 2014 study that was performed, we see that there's a lot of overstatement in terms of these claims, and especially when it gets to the minor claims. So you'll see there that for sort of represented claims on between 0 to 15 years, the average payment is 1.6, and that then obviously versus a greater than 55 being 289,000, and then greater than 65, 547. Again, on the male side, it's again higher at that lower level. So there's a greater possibility for overstatement for these minor claims, and that was the outcome of this 2014 research, where you can see then for the age of the accident is less than 20 years, the expected percentage for overstatement is about 50%, and so it moves down the higher the age of at the time of the accident is, with 0% between 45 and 65. So there's quite a bit of focus in terms of the assessment of these claims, and as the CEO has said, we've introduced an actuarial, in-house actuarial function to assess these claims. Next slide. Okay, and then just briefly in closing, we are obviously hopeful that the finalization of the RAF Amendment Act will be concluded and or at least move beyond our expectations in terms of, and it will assist us in terms of the implementation of the installment payments, which as you can see is at the core of the RAF financial sustainability. The publishing of medical tariffs and minimum information will also assist in bringing down administrative costs, and it will expedite the settling of claims and moving towards a 120-day settlement as you would have seen in our targets. From a governance perspective, the RAF board has been stable for about 2 years. The board is now in its final term, and their contracts will be coming to an end at sort of the end of this calendar year. But we're hopeful that we could have some continuance in terms of that board so that we're able to continue in terms of this 2025 strategic plan and have the necessary support that we require. And also with achieving the clean audit in 1920, we're obviously hopeful that the speedy resolution of this litigation with the AGSA could be concluded fairly shortly, because it is critical and crucial to ensuring the implementation of the strategy. And that brings me to the end of the presentation. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you, CFO and the CEO for that presentation. Let's probably then to take engagement from honorable members. Chris, As noted, Honorable Chris Hasunga, the floor is yours, Honorable Hasunga.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, colleagues, and also staff, in particular then everybody from the Road Accident Fund. Thank you for the presentations. Mr. Letswalo, if I could start with you and your presentation. The law provides for 120 days to settle a claim, but in April last year, you approached court to then get an extension to 180 days, and then in September of last year, 2021, you again approached court for possible further extension. Could you please then align this to the average period which claimants do wait, and the experiences which we've had in complaints of people waiting for an extended period beyond, you know, what is shown in presentations. My second question relates to the other legal avenue that you sought in approaching an extension on the requirements to submit your books to Treasury, where claims were made that you said that the total outstanding amount of claims wasn't 300 billion, but 30 billion. Could you, in a way, verify that? Could you give us more content? Because certainly what we've seen here today rather suggests closer to 300 billion outstanding claims rather than 30 billion. So if you could just elude and expand on that impression that was conveyed. The third question deals with the direct claims, and then in particular section 19 C, where the Road Accident Fund invited as a strategy and as a marketing exercise direct claims. The Road Accident Fund, especially through your predecessor, invited claims. And now it seems that there is a new direction by you in terms of realizing what the law says. My concern is, what happens to those claims now? Because certainly there must be a lot of claims somewhere that have run out of the claim consideration period. So how are you dealing with those claims that assumingly are now stacked somewhere and not being addressed? My fourth question then is about defending the contested claims and the 10.6 billion rand in legal costs, and which you so adequately put that it's often a matter of kicking for touch, in that all claims are simply defended from the onset. What is the average period of settlement currently, and how are you intending to improve this? Because we still sit with, the as you put it, the problem which we must deal with, which then alludes to amendments to the current act. And you know that I've been in contact with you, and that there are people and specialists within the sector able and willing to submit such proposals, which they claim can save up to 20 to 25% of the current financial structure and formation. Would you be willing to allow these submissions to assist in stopping the bleeding with the Road Accident Fund? My eyebrows raised, Mr. Letswalo, when you mentioned that the Road Accident Fund should get involved in road safety. I would suggest that that is the last thing that the Road Accident Fund should get involved in. The RTMC and the RTIA are the two entities involved in that, as you would know. And I think it's adequate that they struggle with this. We don't need a further entity to also struggle with this. Then something in a more operational sense, Mr. Letswalu, I understand that about 30 staff members at the Menden branch, Road Accident Fund branch, have been suspended for more than a year now, fully paid, fully salaries, all benefits paid. What are the circumstances? How can you have close to a whole office, 30 staff members in suspension with full benefits without any progress in settlement on this? Thank you, Chairperson. Those are my questions. And I do not have anything on the financial side. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Asinja. Any further questions from honorable members? You just one from my side. The first one relates to the vote to secure legal services that will help the fund with the in-house attorneys. When do we expect closure on this? Because on two occasions it was advertised and then withdrawn. The second one relates to the matter of the tension between the AG and the fund, just a clarity in terms of how far is this process, so that at least we are able to satisfy ourselves in terms of the closure on this matter. And then the third one, the new policy and the new strategy, has it been the subject matter of litigation, which I suspect in most cases the issue will be the rationality of the decisions to dispense with the panel of attorneys, as you have alluded to. I've noted, Honorable Patterson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I must apologize for not turning my camera on. My internet connection is very unstable. Chair, just two questions. In consultation some time ago with the medical fraternity, the issue was raised in relation to RAF claims about certain prescribed limits being placed on certain injuries that are claimed for by claimants to the RAF. In that the system is open to abuse by attorneys in the private sector who can go out of their way to claim excessive amounts and reap the benefit by claiming from the claimants a what's known as a contingency fee, a percentage of the amounts that the successful claim was, which can lead to the situation of attorneys becoming very wealthy, but the claimants ending up with very little as a result. So is the RAF considering that in terms of new legislation to place limits on that? And that's the first question. And the second question, I've been through the budget documents, and what I don't seem to see is an amount allocated to a pet project of mine, which is the digitization of the driver's licenses. And so that's the one question. What amount has been allocated to the digitization of the driver's license? And then in a previous engagement, Chair, we met with the entity responsible for that, and they told us that we were looking at 2025 for the rollout of digitized licenses. And I indicated at that time, and it was covered in the media, that is simply far too long. And the excuse given is that Parliament, the Cabinet has still not signed it off, and that the entire system has to be replaced. So my question coming from that to the minister is has Cabinet number one signed it off? And number two, the current format of the card, as it appears now, as it is currently in my car, what is wrong with that format? Why does it have to be completely redesigned? Are there security flaws in it? Is it too easily duplicated? What is wrong with that? Because, see, if you go down to basics, somebody somewhere has to go onto a computer and enter the details of a person applying to renew their driver's license or a new driver's license holder, and simply input information into a platform or into a certain software, and it produces that license, which then is printed by the machine. So why is it not possible to simply take that digital version before it is printed and put it on an app that people can download and have the digitized version on their phones, on their smartphone, as well as receiving a printed version of the card? I really do not understand the need to reinvent the wheel on driver's licenses and create an entirely new format, which takes months and years to sort out, when we actually have a system which has to be put into some sort of software in order to print it. And surely that we can just, at that point, take the digitized version, make it available on an app, and then the person can also receive their printed card. So if we could just get some clarity around that, because I do not understand the workings of that, and I'm sure that the rest of South Africa would be particularly interested in the answer to that question. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honourable Tim Bratiseth. Honourable McDonald.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm also not going to put my camera on due to network challenges. Chairperson, some of my questions have been answered. I just want to make a couple of comments. Chairperson, on Mr. Letsolo from the CEO, I want to commend you on the job done so far. You've taken an entity that was about to implode financially, and you've done a great job in stabilizing the entity that was bleeding. And firstly, I would like to commend you on that. Secondly, CEO, I went to the Bloemfontein branch the other day, and it's the one in the CBD, and it seems it's very difficult for people to get in there. It's always closed. There's always excuses. There's always problems getting into that office, and if that could be attended to. And my question is, the standoff with the AG, when will this be resolved? Because we can't have an entity that's fighting another entity within government, and it's in the media, and it causes a spat with each other, and it's a he says, she said, and it's become a problem. And I would really like to see us get this resolved as soon as possible, because it's good for the Road Accident Fund, and it's good for the AG that this is the issue is resolved, so that we can continue with our lives and everybody is happy, and there's no money wasted on litigation on accounting principles. And that's my only comments and questions. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Mukti. Honourable Marcosini. Marcosini, is there a problem with connection?
Chairperson, yes, there is a problem with connection from Mr. Chavangu.
Okay, all right. Maybe just while we're still trying to sort that out, the last one from my side, has there been any interaction with the Legal Practice Council CEO with regard to some of the challenges that you have alluded to, or probably even the new strategy and the policy, just to take them on board in terms of appreciating the the need for the intervention around the policy and the strategy, which was informed, I believe, by the background that you have alluded to, about to implode fund, the rate of execution that was facing the fund, but more than that, also has there been any interaction with the registrar or the, let's say, the office of the Chief Justice with regard to the case management? Because I believe that, as you have correctly pointed out, there's many legal cases will definitely have an impact in terms of the case management, in terms of the court role. So thank you. We will wait for Honorable Macrosini to sort out his network problem. Over to you.
Thanks very much, Chair. I think the first part, let me ask the issue around involvement in road safety. As it were, Chair, we suffer the consequences of any accident that happens on our roads. We suffer the consequences of any death that happens. We are the ones that must pick up all the pieces and make sure that people continue their lives. And it's going to be important. One of the most important aspects, for instance, is this part of apportionment. If you know, once you get injured, for instance, you are a passenger, you have not buckled your safety belt, there's an apportionment portion. Instead of giving you 100%, for instance, we will give you 50%. And South Africans must know that. Yeah, that's the first part. But I think the issues around, if you look at Section 4 of our Act, actually wants us to invest a lot into research, certainly in line with road safety. And we need to be, we are not going to be the lead agency. We know the lead agencies are TMC. We're going to support them in doing what they're doing. Coming from an angle we are coming at. And I think we need to also invest a bit of what we have in making sure that the message is out there and that the benefits of the road safety strategy starts to show results. Because once they show results, in our view, that will help the sustainability of the fund going forward. So investment in that area and collaboration with them is going to be helpful. It's not competition. We are going to work very closely with them. The issue around the 120 days of settlement of claims and 180 works like this. So the 180 we're asking for is at the time when we had a liquidity crunch, meaning people will just ask for money we never had, attach our bank accounts, and in a way jump the queue. This has nothing to do with the settlement, because remember, settlement is about, when we looked at it, it was going around 5 years on average, 5 to 6 years on average. And our issue was far away from the 120 days of settling a claim. So we would have settled, we would have taken 5 years to settle that claim and another 1,000 days probably paying that money out, because RAF simply did not have the money to pay that. But in the process of people waiting for that, others will jump the queue by attaching our bank accounts, which is why we went to the court and asked for this 45A. And we ask for 180 days to say if the debt is now older than 180 days, meaning the matter has been settled, we have got to pay you. The payment is the one that will take 180 days. So we ask for that 180 days we are given. As we say now, we are sitting at 120 days after you have settled your claim, then we pay you. If we take it in on a line basis, it means if we settle the matter within 120 days as we target it, then it will take you another 120 days to receive your money. You should get your money within 240 days, which is a big thing compared to the 5 years that we used to spend over the period. So the average waiting period has been 5 years. We are trying to reduce it to less than a year. And this is the direction that we are moving. The second part is the legal avenue and the extension and the requirements of the actuarial amount. So the issues around this 300 billion is simply an actuarial liability. An actuarial liability is something that is for insurance companies that would actually collect premiums that are associated with the risk with which they are taking, and consequently they've got policyholders, they calculate their such. What is called IFRS 4, and I think others are moving to what is called IFRS 17 that is coming in this year and the next year, or all the other insurers. It actually applies to people that are governed in terms of the Insurance Act of 2017. We are not part of that. We are not an insurer. Therefore, we are using what, in determining our accounting policy, we use what is called IPSA 42, which is International Public Sector Accounting Standard Board Standard 42 that deals with social benefits. IFRS does not have a social benefit standard. We are using that standard to determine our accounting policy because GRAP does not have. And that is the difference between that actuarial liability and actual accounting liability at 30 billion. So we use actuarial liability for purposes of risk management and not for purpose of accounting liability. On accounting liability side, as we are saying, it was sitting at around 30 billion. And we are still confident that we are right regarding that, because if we are insurer, then we will talk about that, but we are not insurer in this respect. But one of the things that we wanted to do is not to lose sight of the fact that there was this so-called 300 billion liability, which is why we are managing it. We are also still calculating it to just see what the effects of the new strategy are on it, on the claims this side, not necessarily on the accounting side. Now, then there is an issue around the direct claims in terms of 19C, and that, yes, of course, I mean, I'm the last one to criticize my predecessors. It was a direction they were going. The view was that perhaps was coming, they were preparing for it. So the strategy was quite different from what we looked at. And of course, the reality is what? Is that the rough system is quite convoluted for an ordinary person. Even doctors, people that would think that know and understand, educated people, including lawyers that don't operate in this space, don't understand how the rough system works. So it's difficult for people to do that. And the aim was that, let's make sure that at least 25% that the lawyers take goes to the claimant. And consequently, that was the direct move claim that was marketed like that. Yes, we have got claims that are there. Once the claim is there, it can't run out the claims consideration period. We have got to make sure we assess that claim. That's why you would see somewhere we went and checked whether those direct claims have got enough information for us to be able to make an offer. And we realize that most of them don't, and they are dormant, because we try to contact these people and we can't get hold of these people. And it's creating an issue for us. As we say, we can only operate within the realms of the law. There is no longer a bill of RAF sitting there. So we just focus on the RAF Act, and we are actually looking at those amendments. And of course, I mean, people in hindsight, they can say it's wrong and all that. We are not saying that. We are just saying that the law does not enable that aspect of the work, and we must do what is enabled by the law. And we need in the amendment to change that 19C, because our view is that doctors are better people to actually fill in those forms than the lawyers. Because lawyers also have VSA about whether the extent of the injury and what happens. Now, number four is the defending of the contested claims and the average period of settlement. As I say, the average period of settlement, as it were, it is about 5 years. And of course, there are those backlogs that we have got to deal with. And we have finalized these issues around what must happen. We have got a thing called settlement hub where things are settled within 120 days. We focus on 120 days. We know it's a long shot, but it's where we are. We want to settle this thing within 120 days. Are we comfortable with our backlog? Yes. Do we want private sector to be involved? I don't think they can do better than we have done. I must be honest. Of course, private sector is going to come and tell you they are doing the same. And our view is very simple, Mr. Usinga, that private sector would not get involved in a process where they're not going to make money. And the reality is here. They are saying they want to come and help us with the backlog. Earlier on, they had anticipated that we are going to give them a so-called 300 billion liability, that they would have simply went into that book and did what we did and come back and said, this is a 30 billion liability and paid it like that. And we would be sitting here and people would think private sector is more creative than we are. I don't think that the team that we have at the RAF fails in doing its work. And I think we are quite clear about the fact that we will settle these claims, we will settle them properly. The system we are bringing in, a world-class system. Artificial intelligence is going to come into the space. We are going to do much better than any private sector entity would do. We are open, of course, for submissions and we'll look at them, but it's not something that is primarily in our minds. In our minds, we are focused on this new strategy and we see it working. The issue around in-house attorneys, it cannot be correct here that we went into the market and we withdrew it. We actually are working with that. We have appointed 83 so far. We have advertised again for more because we are facing headwinds here and there in other high courts, like North Houghton High Court, where we see the numbers and people just counting the numbers that we have and actually pushing these things to go to court, knowing very well that the numbers are few. So we have issued out another one. So we'll be hiring another. I will be doubling that capacity to make sure that our people are there. But the aim is to make sure that these issues are settled out of court as per the provisions of Section 24. And we must avoid the court at all costs if we can. The issue around the clarity on the AGSA. Yeah, as I say, we differ with the AGSA on the interpretation of whether we must apply IFRIS, whose powers are there, where stated our powers in terms of graft 3. And of course, I mean, we have got 14 grounds, not only one, 14 grounds, 10 of them, substantive grounds on which we are sitting, we are trying to set the decisions of the AGSI. It is not something we took lightly, something that we are a Chapter 9 institution. Unfortunately, it's not something that intergovernmentally can deal with. Once we deal with Chapter 9, the intergovernmental relations framework falls out. Because they're independent in that way. There's no minister who can tell them what to do. And the only way we can deal with their findings is through a judicial intervention. And that's the only way that we can carry it. We tried, of course, to deal with these issues through a mediation with National Treasury, but halfway through the AG felt that they don't want to proceed with it, which is one thing we're also challenging in our approach to say they should have allowed the process to conclude, but of course they're not forced to be in that space because they are Chapter 9, which is different from any other entity. Now, the strategy of and the rationale to dispense, of course, I mean, we took that rationale. The best thing to look at is just to say, if you are going to insource or outsource, what makes sense? You only outsource if it gives you efficiency. In this case, we outsource as it was giving us worse inefficiencies of the worst order that we can think at 10.6 billion a year cost. And it was growing, and we had to do something about it, and that's what we have done. Interactions with LPC. It's very difficult here to deal with LPC. Self-regulation, in my view, has never worked. You are talking to the state. So if you go to the executive of the LPC, you are going to find people that are actually the previous RAF panel members. Even when the panel members were sitting on the LPC. So you complain about the same people to the same people. It really doesn't work at LPC, thing, in my view. And we keep on talking to them. We have engagement on engagement. There is no sector or profession that we have had engagement with more than the LPC. We have met them more than any other stakeholder in our stakeholder management space. So it's something that we continue to engage them on, but we are quite certain and clear about where their things are lying. I mean, their interests are lying, very clear. The judiciary, we engage with the judiciary. Even in this, I think in May, there is a thing called the NEEC, which is the National Efficiency Committee that is chaired by the Chief Justice. We do go there and we discuss because 88% of all civil litigation in South Africa is RAF matters. So we do discuss with them and discuss those issues. And of course, in other instances, we do win. In other instances, we don't. And remember, the independence of the judiciary must also be taken into consideration when you consult with them, because much more of the things tend to also come and they've got to deal with those matters. We have seen it with this issue around us and our panel of attorneys, where we discussed certain things, and of course, at the end of the day, they were being accused of being biased because we have met with them. So we also balance that. From an administrative point of view, we continue to meet as administrators. And then, of course, claiming of claims, the percentage of the amount, the claimants continue to pay about 25% as it were. We are trying to make the RAF system very simple for people to be able to claim. We are saying give us the minimum requirements. We'll tell you what we are looking out for. We are going out massively in the area of budgeting, as the CFO has already said, to actually make sure that we explain to people what RAF is about, what is required by RAF for them to be able to do what they need to do. We have got undertakings that we give for the medical tariffs, right? So we have got the medical tariffs that we are going to come up with. We have got undertakings, but these undertakings are open-ended because a person can just go to a surgeon today, let's just say a plastic surgeon, and go and say, I'm doing skin grafting, I need a plastic surgeon, I want to remove this scar, and then pay a lot of money, let's just say about $500,000, come back and claim that because we have given the undertaking. The person will say, but this was as a cause of the accident. In ordinary, they would have to come to us and say, give us a pre-approval, we'll see whether that makes sense for that person to do that, and we'll say, this is how much we'll pay, should we agree that this must be done. And the medical protocol, so saying what comes before what, and then all those things that must be done before must actually be put in there. So we have got those protocols that were put in place. We are bringing medical tariffs. We are clear that this undertaking will be able to do. I can't deal with digitization of driver's licenses because that's in another area, which is RTMC, and I think the department may want to answer that. Honorable McDonald talked about the excuses of the Bloemfontein branch. We have that, but I mean, the biggest issue is what we are trying to do currently. Our model works on having provincial offices now, fully fleshed. We are going to get an office like that one in Menlyn, in every province. We are not going to look at this because the penetration model that we used in the past, service provision model, was based on where the courts were. For instance, Bloemfontein reports to Johannesburg branch. In Gauteng, we've got three. So we've got the head office in Pretoria, we've got Menlyn region, which takes care of Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northwest, and the northern part of Pretoria, or of Gauteng. That is because the North Gauteng High Court sat there with that jurisdiction. So if you look at it, all those things were there. Now we have got the Limpopo High Court, we have got the Mpumalanga High Court, but we are still sitting in the Western University. So we are rationalizing that to make sure we've got 9 provincial offices, and we are going to have where this all this processing centers, one in Western Cape and one in Gauteng, that is going to process all those claims, but our footprint will actually go back. We had the footprint in hospitals for the wrong reasons, but now we're going to have that footprint that is going to do the right things in the right area so that we have got a visible footprint. And I think that the other issues that we had, where we struggled a lot with this thing called COVID. Half the time our guys, when they do that, and in smaller offices, of course, once a person has got COVID, most of the time, he's a contact of everybody in the office. So we had to close most of the office intermittently because of COVID, but it's something that we are also working towards. And it's something that I will take personally and check what is happening in the Bloemfontein branch to check why they closed and why they're not taking our people properly. An expedited process has been done in terms of the ATSA and ourselves. It's a review process, but we agree that it can take long. So we have agreed that we are now approaching the DJP in North Gauteng to make sure that they put a full bench and quite quickly so that we can deal with this matter on an expedited process. Because the sooner we conclude on this matter, the better for us, Chair. I hope I've answered all the questions. If there are any that I've left, you'll excuse me, Chair, and then we can be told and I'll respond. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, CEO. There's one on the chat from Ntando Noluchungu. Say thank you for the work that you and your team has done and the processes that you have put in place to put RAF back on the track. We also take note of the millions that have been saved from sourcing the services. Continue using this model in order to save more money. What is the total amount still owed to claimants? When do you think this debt will be settled? The AG South Africa argues that your new accounting system has led to RAF underestimating its liabilities. What is your response to that? Over to you.
Thanks, Chair. What we owe claimants as we speak is 9.5 billion. As we said, we have reduced that from 19.7 billion, and the average age of the debt at the time was sitting far beyond 250 days. We now are owing a claimant 9.5 billion, and then the age is only 4 months, which means that if we had all this money, we'll pay it so that we are at zero. But we owe claimants 9.5 billion that of settled claims. And of course, in anticipating future claims that are coming, we are owing about another 15 billion to them. But those are claims that have not been settled but are in the system. So that's where we are. But for cash purposes and us having the money, we needed another 9.5 billion for us to be able to say we are at zero. We owe no one currently on what has been settled. We did agree, as I said, with the AG's view that we are underestimating the debt. We think it's overestimated. Using an actuarial deficit for a social benefit is wrong at all levels. Using IFRS 4 was never appropriate in our view. We had to use, and of course, I mean, the rationale of bringing IPSAS 42 by the International Public Sector Accounting Standards Board was because there was a realization that social benefits are being accounted for using a wrong accounting method, which is the insurance approach, which is something that we do not follow because we have a social benefit scheme. Even the prudential authority at the Reserve Bank is clear about the fact that we are a social benefit. So the fact that AG says that we are an insurer tells you why they think that we have overstated that. Of course, if you are an insurer, yes, it will be clear that we have overstated, but we are social benefit and we do not have a nexus between the money we collect from the fuel levy and the benefits that we are paying out, which is why we are social benefit. And it's a pay-as-you-go system. And if in an insurance system, you pay your premium upfront and you get covered for that. In this case, the pay-as-you-go. So we do not have any reserves to talk about like any other insurance company. So that's why we are saying what we are saying. And we are quite comfortable about that. Thank you,
CEO. I see Honorable Marcosini's hand is again up. I hope this time his network is okay.
Thank you,
over
Chair.
To you, Honorable Marcosini.
Thank you, Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yes, let me also echo the very same sentiment that were echoed by Mrs. Noluchungu. I wonder as to whether some of the questions have been answered while I was still lost. But the few that I have is, one, it is alleged that claimants who are known for RAF executive receive preferential treatment with regards to claims. How far through it is this? Then the second question would be, when is RAF going to use the petrol levy to help the motor vehicles owners in South Africa so that they can be they can pay less with regard to petrol? Thank you very much.
Thanks, Honorable Makosini. See you.
Chair, let me answer it in this fashion. One is that we are spouse to our values. Our values are I care values. I care, the first part of the I is integrity. No one will work at RAF
And I think I must answer, there was a question about 30 people that were suspended as well. The integrity aspect of this part says that we must always act with integrity. The account A aspect talks about accountability. There is no one at RAF that will ever pay a claimant more than they deserve. And this is the part that we want to clear out. And especially why we want to implement the ICMS that is working on the base of artificial intelligence. The system will simply spill out a figure regardless of who the person is. So it can't be the issue about who's close to the claims handler, who's close to who, who's close to her, because this will be something that is done by a system. And this is why we want to drive that process. Because people always claim all these things. People get paid first, and then that's why we released the top 20 people who were paying out, because they were claiming that we pay our friends first. And in the top 20, they could not even pinpoint who our friends were in there, because we don't know those people. Now, that's the reality. People will always come with stories about this. And in the main, this is driven by lawyers that are very pissed about the fact that we are taking them out of the RAF system. That's a fact. So they've been making a lot of money. They're no longer making money. They are fighting for this 10.6 billion. If you look at our numbers, we have reduced that to 3 billion. That must tell you that 7 billion has gone out of their hands. Of course, they're going to make noise. But we are happy that if you look at that 7 billion, it's actually going to the claimant. Because if you look at the RNYP, you'll see that it's reducing. Because we are taking money from these efficiencies, we are pumping it into that. We are making a contribution to vehicle owners, because this year we have not taken an increase. It could have increased. We did not take an increase. And we think that over time, it will be stagnant for a while and without necessarily RAF going under. So it's sustainable RAF going forward, and that's our contribution. But part of the contribution we want to make towards that is to make sure that our roads are much safer. They understand what they are covered for and what they are not covered for. And for us, it's something that we are contributing towards South Africans. But you must remember, our mandate is to make sure that the claimant, which half the time is not the owner of a vehicle, is the one that might benefit more, and which is taking care of all those people, putting them in a position that would have been quicker than we used to do if they were not involved in car accidents. So we try to avoid that at all costs. Should they then need our assistance, we want to make sure that that assistance comes quickly, as it were. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Theo, for that response and engagement in terms of issues that were raised by honourable members. I want to believe that we are done with this first part. We can now then move to the second part of the presentation.
Sorry, Chairperson.
Honourable Zwane.
Sorry, Chairperson.
Honourable Chair.
Chair.
Can the Chair take over from here in terms of the Division of Labour? This is a joint committee.
Sorry, Chairperson.
Yes,
Sorry, Chairperson.
There is a hand that seeks to say no to the something of rules.
Tim,
let me campaign that the hand.
Sorry, Chairperson.
Yes, Tim. We can hear you, sir. Can you say what you want to say, Honorable Tim? We are all yours, sir. Oh, maybe he has a bit of a problem in terms of network. No, thanks, Comrade Kenny. For holding forth such an interesting part. Let me take this one, the bigger one, I guess. I'm not going to greet because the greetings were done. Let's shift over, and maybe before doing that, let me thank the entire leadership of RAF, the board and the CEO. And thank you for honoring the invitation. by both the select committee and the portfolio committee. Let me allow this opportunity then to the department to brief us on the same issues, the APP's strategic plan and the budget of the Department of Transport for 2022-2023. I don't know if Minister wants to say something, or let me, before I go to this business, I can see that there are hands from the previous presentation. Honorable team, we are trying to give you an opportunity.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My apologies, the power has just gone where I am. So I'm now contacting you on my phone. Chair, I will hold back the question. The question was just about the budget and the process allocated to the digitization of driver's licenses. If you feel it will be appropriate for me to ask that question after the next presentation, I'm happy to do so, Chair, but that question was not answered.
Oh, you asked that question and it was not answered.
Yes, but Chair, maybe it's more appropriate it comes after this presentation, because maybe the previous questions were all about the RAF. I may have jumped the gun there, Chair. I will hold back.
Let me just check why was the question not answered, so that I do not answer on something that I was not cheering on. If you lower your hand, I think the hand of a CEO is here. We may as well say he must respond to that. Nade Letoa.
Thank you very much, Chair. We didn't answer that question because it is, I think, relevant to the department, because we don't deal with driver's license, so we didn't answer that. The reason why I raised my hand, Chair, was to ask to be excused so that we don't just jump off. We asked to present first so that we could actually jump to other commitments that we had asked that we attend to, if we are allowed by the Chair to step off the platform. Thanks, Chair.
It would have been a sin for you to step off without having heard my voice. Now that you have you have spoken to me, I have already thanked you together with your team. You are allowed, I've been told you were supposed to go to Mpumalanga or Limpopo somewhere there. So you're allowed to attend to your next engagement. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you to honorable members.
Thank you. Honorable team, your question will be answered, sir. I'm requesting that the department may as well note some of these questions that needed the department's response as after the presentation, of course. Let's check. Is the minister here? Deputy Minister, do you want to say something before I open up to the officials?
Chairperson, no, thank you very much. The minister's overall input covered the department as well, together with a road accident fund comments. I will probably come in when questions are asked. So yes, we can go on with the presentation. Thank you, Chair, and good morning.
Nice to hear your voice, Deputy Minister. Thank you very much, Sirakela Pambili. Honorable Matias, sir, could you please take the podium and save us a bit of time?
Um,
Thank you. Thank you, Chair, and thank you as well to the co-chair of the Select Committee. And good morning once again to the esteemed members of Parliament. And also good morning to our colleagues from the department, senior management that is present here. We had already greeted the minister and the deputy minister who are part and parcel of this session. Chair, the Department of Transport will be presenting our annual performance plan business, our strategy, a stress plan outcome that took place early this year, as well as we'll be presenting our budget. We will start with our annual performance plan and will be led by Chief Director, Mr. Ramansi, who is all in this platform as well. And then
Mr. Madias, eh?
Yes, Chair.
If somebody else was sharing, I'm sure they were going to say, can't we make something with the light of the office where you are? But because it's me chairing, and I'm as guilty as charged, I'm sure. Let's continue.
I think Chair is more of the. Of the quality of the
stop right there, let's continue.
thank you Chair. I think the network itself is not helping, but I've tried my best to improve the light. Chair, I will hand over to Mr. Ramansi to take the members through the presentation of the Department of Transport. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Acting DG. Ms. Ramansi, come.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and the Chairperson of the Select Committee as well, members of the two committees, Minister, Deputy Minister, and the colleagues. If I can ask Chairperson, with your indulgence, just to save the broadband, that I switch my camera off, and then I also share my screen from my side. With your indulgence, sir. Chairperson, I will go through the strat plan and the APP of the Department of Transport. Obviously, I will consider it as read, but I will just, for the benefit of time, just focus on the key issues that we want to drive through and also present to the committees in terms of why our plans look the same, the way they look, and also the number of strides that we have made in implementing the MTSF over the previous 2.5 years, so that it becomes just our pre-information that details the plan going forward. Obviously, we are still aligned to the 7 APEX priorities of the 6th administration. We are also still aligned to the minister's priorities as they are in his performance agreement. And we will move at speed to the other slides that I'm going to skip are generic, and we have not changed. We are still responding to the outcome 2 and 5, contributing mainly to 1, 2, 5, and 6. But if you look at the work of the department, there are contribution at various levels on all the 7 priorities of government. For the purpose of time and for this meeting, we will put our focus mainly on the 3 key strategic focus areas of the department, that talks to safety and security, that talks to public transport, that talks to infrastructure build. And on the issues of maritime and the transformation, we'll just touch on the key issues just to to highlight that. The values have not changed. They remain what we have. And these are the eight focus areas of the department. Five of the first five are aligned to the minister's priorities. And the other three were added to ensure that there is total alignment to the medium-term strategic framework. And these are delivery programs that we use in the department to implement those strategic focus areas. And we will go into the strategic plan. Just at the top, Chair, we just added this slide just to give credence to our strategic plan and our APP. And just to highlight that at the beginning of the sixth administration, Chairperson, we were faced as a sector with a number of challenges. And the biggest for us that we have always communicated were the Road Accident Fund, the Passenger Rail Agency of South Africa, and SANDAL. With regard to RAF, I think that it was our biggest challenge in that it's runaway actuarial liability of more than 300 billion, and also the short-term liability of about 17 billion. And the next was PRASA, where we were experiencing deterioration of infrastructure, non-provision of services, inadequate spending on its budget, and the non-achievement of its performance targets. I think those have been topical over time. And the other one was SANDAL, mainly with regard to the GFIP saga. There were also governance issues that we needed to address at RTMC, RTIA, and SAMS. So the sector needed to show some sense of urgency in addressing these pertinent issues and challenges facing. And I think piggybacking on the minister's opening remarks, we now know that it can't be business as usual. And there are certain areas where we will need to improve as a sector to ensure that we move at speed to address that. But I think it's also pertinent, Chair, that before we actually go through, we take a bit of time and talk to some of the strides that we have made in terms of how far we have moved in the 2 years of implementation of the MTSF. And starting with the RAF as one of the main challenges, as also presented in the previous presentation, that in addressing what the challenge was at RAF, they then came up with a new strategic plan, and they introduced a new operating model, moving away from the model that was litigation heavy to that focuses on claims management, thus prioritizing any investigations and settlement of claims within 120 days. I think that is one of the major movements that we have achieved in this regard. With regard to also reducing costs, the termination of the mandate of the panel of attorneys, which was to reduce costs and also improve efficiencies, also the reduction of medical costs by, among others, developing the RAF medical tariff, implementing treatment protocols, and introducing medical pre-authorizations. I think, Chair, we need to highlight it as one of the most achievement that we continue to work around, and mainly from the minister's perspective, that the permanent board was appointed during the period under review, and a permanent CEO was also appointed. And in terms of driving this new model, matching orders from the minister and support that was provided to the agency itself. We want to talk to how far we've gone in that regard. The other part, Chair, with regard to the challenge is at PRASA. And we are the first to admit that PRASA has not moved at the pace that we wanted it to move. But there are strides that we have also introduced. As part of that, a permanent board was also appointed by the minister. And we also appointed a CEO, and certain issues didn't go well, and we are working on those. But it's also pertinent, Chair, that we highlight a number of issues that we are doing in that space. And in the past 2 years, the cluster rolling stock fleet renewal program, which is at the fore of our recovery of the rail operations. We are reporting 79 new trains that have been produced through the Gibela plant. And this figure will increase to 85%, 85 trains by the end of this financial year once we have verified the quarter four information. We also need to highlight that in terms of that production at Gibela, localized sourcing and procurement is sitting at 50%. And as for local content, and that is some of the issues that we are driving from a technical point of view. The number of jobs in this space, only on the fleet renewal program, is sitting at 1,004, with 420 of those being women, 788 being the youth. And in other infrastructure programs, PRASA is reporting around 1,691 jobs created in the signaling program, only in Gauteng and the Western Cape. Further than that, Chair, still with PRASA, what we're trying to address with regard to this challenge, the PRASA corridor recovery. I think this it's most important that we highlight, Chair, that in the past 2 years, we have recovered around four corridors, and these corridors are currently running limited services. Three of these corridors we have also deployed new trains to these corridors. And these include the Mabopane corridor in Gauteng, the Salisbury corridor in Gauteng, the southern suburbs corridor in the Western Cape, and the northern corridor in Bellville and in the Western Cape. We are very much aware of the challenges of encroachment onto the rail reserves that is currently happening on the central line in the Western Cape. But we can also talk to the partial services that have been restored on that corridor between Cape Town and Langa. And also in the first quarter of this upcoming financial year, we are in progress to phase in the rollout of operations in the Pinelands Langa line, in the Langa Serepta and Bellville line, and also in the Bellville and Langa corridor. In Gauteng, there are three corridors that are also running with interim diesel services. These are Pinaarspoort to Naledi to Pretoria, Naledi to Johannesburg, and also in the Lerala corridor. In KwaZulu-Natal, we've also have limited services restored in Umlazi and Durban, and obviously these have been affected by the recent floods, and we are working together with the province to ensure that we fix the infrastructure, and we also work on that. But more priority, you'll see that in our strat plan, Chairperson and members, that we will be looking at mainly the Mabopane rail corridor and also the Central Line corridor. And maybe it's just to add more of the narrative that we did not include in the presentation. But in December 2019, services were suspended on the Mabopane rail corridor due to extensive theft and vandalism of the power supply system and other rail infrastructure. But in February 2020, a program to recover these was then introduced. This included restoring the power supply system, upgrading the signaling system on the corridor, rehabilitating the vandalized stations for revenue collection, and also upgrading the security system within this corridor. And we are also happy to announce that on the 17th of January 2022, the services resumed 42 train tips per day on this corridor, and five stations are now operational on this corridor. Workers already commenced to rehabilitate additional stations on this corridor, and also services have also been resumed on the developed line. On the central line corridor, mainly regarding the encroachment on the rail reserves in the Western Cape, we've got about 3,858 temporary structures, informal housing, that have been erected on the railway reserves along the central line in the Western Cape. And this only covers the areas of Langa, Philippi, and Khayelitsha. With the efforts that we've made as a department and sector, the community has opposed the parcels of land that has been offered through the Department of Public Works and the Western Cape Provincial Government. And no relocation can take place until this matter has been finalized. On the 9th of March, 2022, an implementation protocol was then concluded to address this. And this is between the Department of Transport, the Department of Human Settlement, Public Works and Infrastructure, the Western Cape Departments of Human Settlement, Transport and Public Works, the City of Cape Town, and the Housing Development Agency, and also PRASA, to work around relocation of the of these informal settlers. The steering committee of the implementing protocol has also been established, and the DOT has also entered in a service level agreement with the Housing Development Agency, and which will act as an implementing agent to move these people by April 2022. So these are part of the of the issues that we have worked on, especially on the issue of PRASA, Chair. And going forward, we will intensify our efforts and ensure that we move at pace to win over and start operations optimally on all the corridors that we want to revitalize over the next 2 years. On the SANRAL's issue, Chair, the issues around the GFF, and I think it's very pertinent for us, Chairperson and members, to highlight that we have moved aside as the Department of Transport to look at options of addressing the saga that is GFF, up to a point where we made recommendations to to Cabinet, and that those recommendations were adopted by Cabinet. Well, where we're sitting at the moment is the modalities of the mechanism of implementing the Cabinet decision, and that those are engagements that are between the Department of Transport and National Treasury. And at most, it's on the part of Treasury to ensure that the decision of Cabinet is implemented, and where they need to propose alternatives on the probabilities of what could be covered by the fiscus and what poses risk to the fiscus, they would then be at liberty to propose that, so that we can be able to move at pace on that particular one. And I think once the GFIP saga is resolved, then the ability of SANRAL to continue as a going concern will gain traction, and they can be able to meet their mandate, and we can be able to see their overall condition index increasing as was targeted when we started the SANRAL and APP in 2019. Chair, the other issue that is most pertinent to us is with regard to the deterioration of the provincial road network. And I think it's very pertinent that even before we go to the plans that we have done, we highlight that we had a very important roads in Durban that we held recently, which came up with pertinent resolutions. And once we have worked around those resolutions and be able to enact them, we will come and brief the Protocol Committee on that. At the moment, the process is still at Koto and Minmec level, but we just need to highlight that the key issues that are impacting us on this particular network. One is the over-reliance that we have always reported on the conditional grant, and the provinces not meeting the grant 7% and rent for us. And this discussion will continue, Chair, until from the provincial sphere we see the appetite and effort to also improve on their equitable share and budget for maintenance, rehabilitation, and strategic expansion of roads in that regard. The other part is the adherence to grant conditions. And we are oblivious to the fact that some of the conditions of the grant are not being adhered to by provinces. And from where we are sitting, we are grant monitors. We will work with provinces. We will also amend the DORA conditions to ensure that we improve on the adherence to this fear. What we've also discussed as part of the roads in Durban is the strengthening of our oversight role as the Department of Transport, as a transferring department, that we empower those of us who are doing oversight to ensure that at the most we hold responsible the provinces that are not adhering, and also discussing of the mechanisms that we can take going forward. And I think in the minister's opening remarks, it was also alluded that we need to strengthen project management. But this is another sphere of government. The engagement at this particular level will need to be a very comprehensive, and also to ensure that as we discuss how we strengthen project management, we bring them to a consensus approach, so that at the end of the day, our objective remains on us making sure that the road network, not only at provincial level, also connecting with our local government and national, becomes the priority to improve over the next 2.5 years and also beyond the MTSF. Chair, those are at the core of what we wanted to talk about as challenges that we have faced. But mainly just to close off on the slide, Chair, before we go on to the strat plan proper, is to talk about the issue of the economic shock that emanated from the global COVID-19 pandemic, its resultant lockdowns, and the subsequent revision of the fiscal framework of the country. Chairperson, we have set as a sect, it will be difficult for us not to mention it or to overlook it as a major impediment on where we are in terms of what we wanted to achieve, and also its impact on where we want to be at the end of this NTSS. It should be noted, Chair, that during the pandemic, the sector experienced a whole lot of challenges, substantial revenue losses, not only by the department, but by the entities. Transport operations were halted in aviation, in rail, in general public transport. There were overall delays in planned capital projects and related expenditure. But that only remains a reportable, Chair, and not an excuse. In terms of our planning going forward, you will realize that where we didn't need to downscale our targets, we did not downscale, irrespective of the fact that there was reprioritization and there was also a number of cuts in terms of our resources, especially that went to a number of our planned targets. But we will showcase how we have moved in terms of the targets that we've set for ourselves. So I'll move at speed. I'm not going to touch on all of the slides, Chair. I will just move at speed just to capture on those that we want to reiterate on. Chair, on the safety and security, which is our first focus area, strategic focus area, our target remains reduction of road fatalities by 25% over the MTSF. We had muted downscaling based on the effects of COVID-19. But with further discussions, we realized that if then we could report reductions, albeit with reduced traffic during level 4 and 5 of COVID, we should actually double our efforts to ensure that we meet our original target of reducing road fatalities by 25%. You will see as we go down that we have intensified on a number of our targets that we want to achieve, in augmenting this particular one. The new indicators that are coming onto the space mainly is to look at the number of driving license cards produced. Over the last two and years, you will see that we had reported 1,783 cards. Our target is to go to over 9 million cards by the end of the MCSF. But in November 2021, I think this is a reportable that we need to state, the DLCA experienced a machine breakdown. And this was mainly due to the flooding of the adjacent building to where they are located. On the 20th of January 22, when the production resumed, the backlog for reduction of driving license cards was 693,000. As at 11 April 2022, a total of 628 cards had been produced, leaving the balance of around 11,000 cards from the baseline backlog recorded in January 2021. And that brought the accumulated backlog to date to around 593 at the end of March. The DLCA is operating day and night shift to try and address this backlog and also make sure that we work on our target of achieving the additional 6.5 million cards that we want to produce over the remaining 2-3 years of the MTS. The other issue, Chair, is the turnaround time on the issuance of these driving license cards. And this is a new indicator again that comes onto the space. In 2019, this turnaround time was 42 days. We want to reduce that to 10 to 14 days, Chairperson. By the end of 2014, and this will do in partnership with the DLCA. As part of ensuring that we decrease our road fatalities by 25%, Chair, we want to also achieve the number of provinces that will classify traffic policing as a 7-day 24-hour job. And this comes as a new indicator also in our strategy plan. And Chair, it is important to note that the reason why we did not downscale the target of 25% is based on the additional comprehensiveness that we're going to put on some of the targets to achieve what we want to achieve. We also need to rationalize our law enforcement agencies, and also on the basis of our public transport, we want to make sure that there's dedicated public transport law enforcement, and this will be expanded more on how we want to deal with the issue around scrapping of taxi vehicles, especially on those taxi vehicles that do not meet the criteria for scrapping anymore, but continue to operate illegally on our roads. And on this slide, Chair, we will not touch on it. These were on the original strat plan, just to indicate that on the issue of implementation of the PRASA Integrated Security Plan, our target is to reduce the incidence of personal safety, theft and vandalism of infrastructure in the passenger rail environment by 80%. And there's a new indicator that's augmenting the implementation of the PRASA Integrated Security Plan, Chair. The other issue that we are going to be putting a whole lot of attention on, Chair, it's on the increase in the fatal accident in the general aviation space. Chair, we need to highlight that our target remains 50%. And together with SACA, we have developed a safety strategy to ensure that the safety measures are adhered to by operators in the general aviation space. To that effect, we have started implementing that strategy. It's still at inception stage. What we are discussing with SACA is how soon can we start seeing the impact of the strategy and the reduction in the fatal accidents in the space going forward. The good news on the scheduled commercial aviation is that we're still maintaining the zero rate in terms of fatal accident in that space. On this particular slide, Chair, I'm going to move very quickly. These are standard. The only issue that I'm going to talk to is the implementation of the national strategic plan to end gender-based violence, particularly on the transport sector. Initially, in terms of our original state plan, we had limited our reporting to only two modes, public transport and rail. We have also expanded that to maritime and civil aviation. On the maritime side, we have been assured that there are no cases of GBV that have been reported on South African waters. But to be proactive, we cannot sit on our laurels. We are going to be proactive and develop protocols and also internal controls to ensure that if they are to reach the waters of South Africa, we are ready to deal with those. Chairperson, just on the issue of safety and security, particularly with regards to the TRP, Chair, you would have seen that at the start of the MTSS, the target was for us to scrap additional 63,241 taxi vehicles. Over the last two years, since April 2019, we have scrapped only 5,121, bringing the total scrap since inception of the program to just over 77,000. Chair, we can now highlight that from the 63,000 that we had targeted, only 10,562 meet the criteria for scrapping. And over 40,000 are now not eligible for scrapping as they do not possess an operating license. That meaning that they are operating illegally. We will scrap the remainder, Chair. December 2021, we were sitting at 11,251. But taking into consideration what has been reported in quarter four, the remainder now has decreased to 10,562. And those that are operating illegally, Chair, we will then talk to our law enforcement agencies, and discussions will be initiated with RTMC as to how we can be able to deal with those that are not operating within the legal prescription. But Chair, to talk to the 5,121, which is very low in terms of what we had targeted, we have now generated a memorandum to induce a cutoff date to be proclaimed in order to force the taxi operators to bring their old taxis for scrapping. And this will then address the low uptake from operators that has seen this low number that has been submitted because of the nature of the program that was only demand-driven. And I think, Chair, pertinent to this, it's us intensifying our approach, ensuring that we don't continue business as usual, and to ensure that we can be able to move and report that all 10,562 that are remaining to be scrapped. Additional to that, as a new indicator, Chair, it's the number of illegally converted panel vents that have been prescribed in the public protector report. 1,986 vents. We have targeted that into an entirety, Chair, to be scrapped before the end of the MTSF. So it comes in as a new indicator in this space, Chairperson. Just to move quickly to public transport, Chair, implementation of the national taxi quota resolutions, the revised public transport subsidy policy. We are on the second draft as we speak. We will be concluding with the final round of stakeholder consultations, and we want to ensure that we move at pace to have it approved and implemented. And all that will also talk to the funding model, public transport funding model, that seeks to integrate our taxi industry into the subsidy regime of government. What comes in as a new indicator, Chair, over and above the indicator that existed of the 60% ownership, is to ensure that the framework also includes the 60% implementation of economic value chain opportunities that needs to translate into benefits for the taxi industry. It's a new indicator that comes onto the space. And the others, Chair, the are standard, or the only two other indicators, Chair, that are new onto the strat plan are with regard to standardization of business processes for provincial regulatory entities, and also the capacitation and the operationalization of the national provincial transport regulator to ensure that issuing of permits it's smoothened in this regard, and we can be able to address the issues of illegal operations in that sphere. Chair, on the integrated public transport sphere, we are currently running on 7 cities, and the target is to ensure that we reach 10 cities. Members will be reminded that when the program started, we were sitting with 13 cities. 3 cities, Mbombela, Msunduzi, and Buffalo City, were suspended from the program due to inadequate performance. And questions have been asked as to what would take for these cities to be reintroduced. Chair, we have, in the sector, we are going to piggyback on the readmission criteria that we used for the George municipality. And we are going to use that as a standard. And we can use that as a hurdle test to assess the readiness for readmittance into the program. But we need to highlight that the readmission applications must consider, amongst others, the population growth within those cities, the level of unemployment, the public transport studies, the need for secondary city IPTN models, economic growth. We need to also relook at the financial modeling and the affordability assessment in that regard. So these are some of the readmission criteria that we will use. In terms of the passenger rail, passenger weekday passenger trips, so we were sitting at 165,000. That figure during COVID then decreased to around 143,000. As at December 2021, that figure then went down to 107,408. Our target, as per the original strat plan, was to increase the passenger trips to 365 by the end of the NPSF. We've then downscaled that to 200 passenger trips, taking into consideration, Chair, that the demand for public transport is continually increasing. And if it increases at this rate, then we might surpass our target of 200,000. The 200,000 we just put there as our target, feasible target for the remaining 2 years of the financial year. The other indicators, are standard as they are within the initial strat plan. But you need to highlight that with regard to the operating hours. We are currently operating between 14 to 16 hours. We need to increase that to about 20 hours. But we are going to be directed by the demand. If the demand is for 24 hours, especially in line with the three-shift economy for the recovery of the economy, we will have to meet that. Not only as BRT operations, but as general public transport. So the 20 hours, it's what is feasible within the 5 years, but depending on demand, we might have to move to beyond that particular number, Chair. The other, I'm going to move to the passenger rail network. We need to agree, Chair. The passenger rail trips were impacted by the challenges that we have with mainly the demand and also with the theft and vandalism of the infrastructure. But we're working together with PRASA to ensure that we recover some of these corridors. We'll talk to that as we look at our infrastructure, and also make sure that as we recover and deploy more and more of the new trains, and also through some of the issues that will be reported later, that we reach our targeted 90.07 million passenger trips that we want to achieve. I just want to touch on the infrastructure check, the compliance on the user pay principle check. It's mainly on the network, on the national network that is impacted by GFIP. And the current compliance in the space, it's at 20%. And I think once we can work with National Treasury and conclude on the funding and tariff structure, then we can be able to improve on this compliance and ensure that we equate it to the 100% compliance that we continue to report on the conventional toll plazas that is currently reporting 100% compliance. Chair, the network of Sanda has increased from 22,253 and it has gone up to 22,262. Obviously, due to the increase of the network and some of the roads being proclaimed into the Sanral network, it should be highlighted that the network of Sanral. Sanral wants to increase that network to 25,000 by 2030, and this is still in line with where we want to go. And the main important one is that based on the current resources that Sanral has, they anticipate to keep the overall condition index and maintain it as per the baseline that they reported in 2019, to keep 60% of their roads in good condition, 36% in fair condition, and 4% in poor condition. But with regards to the discussions at the roads in Durban, Chair, the resolutions, if they are implemented, they are going to go a long way to ensure that we don't only keep to the overall condition index, but we move towards improving the roads in poor conditions and in fair conditions. And with regard to the provincial roads, as I stated, this is one of the major areas of challenges that we have been looking at, Chair, and we will ensure that we report to that. And it's one of the areas, Chair, together with Sanral in the provincial space and also the rail space and also the aviation space, where we've got capital expenditure programs to ensure that we optimize job creation in those spaces, Chair. And I think these are the areas where we will also make sure that we commit in consultations with our entities to ensure that we can be able to move at length. The rail corridors that have been earmarked for rehabilitation, 10 priority corridors, and these are the corridors where we will be deploying the new trains. As I said, we are currently reporting 79 train sets, which will increase to 85 train sets, and around in terms of the configuration of new and old train sets. We have configured 16 transnets since the sixth administration took office, and the target is to configure additional 174 trains. And within those 10 corridors, we have identified 216 stations that we need to revitalize. What we will strengthen in this reporting is to specify from these 216, how many of them will we look at functionality improvements, how many of them will need total rebuilding, and how many of them will have commercialization as part of that revitalization in that regard. Chair, we have also stated that in line with the presidential program, The Gauteng and Western Cape remains our key focus areas with regards to modernization and also signaling improvement. We want to complete signaling on the Central Line and the Mabopane Line, and also to finalize a design of re-signaling in KwaZulu-Natal in the remaining 2.5 years. And then also the number of jobs, as I stated, from the road space, in the rail space, and also in the civil aviation space, we are going to be recommitting together with our entities who are responsible for these, so that we can start reporting them, particularly with a bias towards women, youth, and persons with disabilities. Another leg that we continue to look at is the empowerment in that space, to ensure that we also report on the number of SMMEs that have been supported in line with implementations of these infrastructure programs. Towards the end, just to touch base with the issues on the maritime CHF, we need to talk to the issue of the corporatization of the national project. In June 2021, the president announced the decision to corporate TNPA as an independent subsidiary of the Transnet SOC Limited. Following that pronouncement, an interim board was then appointed, a memorandum of incorporation was finalized, and the establishment of the TNPA as an independent subsidiary of Transnet was gazetted in July 2021. And to ensure that we meet all the outstanding matters that ensure that we comply to the National Ports Act 100%, all the requisite statutory and legal requirements needs to be addressed. And to that effect, we have then created a project plan in consultation with GPE and Transnet. We are continuing to work on the outstanding requirements to ensure that we close off on this before the end of the NTSS. On the issue of the Operation Pakisa, Chair, I think it's very important also to highlight that this is one of the areas where due to inefficiencies in container freight rail and port services that tend to raise the cost of South Africa's imports, and they also make our exports less competitive. We as the DOT, in consultations with the DPE and Transnet, we are implementing a number of structural reforms, notably in the space chain. It's the corporatizations which we see it as an achievement. It's going to boost investor confidence. We have also initiated processes to award more concessions in the ports, to partner with the private sector for massive investments in new container port terminals, and to also partner with international terminal operators, mainly to assist TPT to improve on its container freight operations. Plans are already a full chair to introduce third-party access, mainly on the freight rail network. But what have we achieved over the last 2 years, Chair? It's important to highlight that through the maritime transport initiatives in the Operation Pakisa Oceans Economy three-foot plan, that over 4,589 jobs have been created, and over 9.2 billion investments were secured in the last 2.5 years. And obviously going forward, working with the Department of Environment, Fisheries and Forestry, we are concluding on the Oceans Economy Master Plan that will increase on the footprint that we can leave in this particular space. Chair, if I move very quicker on the issue of transformation, obviously the transformation, the issue of the ERT bill. We are lagging behind. The ERT bill is still sitting with Parliament, and we're anticipating that in the next financial year we'll move towards it being approved by Cabinet and towards assessment into law, so that we can move quicker with establishing an operationalization of the transport economic regulator in this regard, and also working address the non-transformation or the slow transformation in the aviation sector and also in the maritime sector in this regard. Chair, very quickly on the innovation perspective, we are happy to announce that the single integrated ticketing system, we are now starting with the pilot. The three cities, Polokwane, Mangaung, and Rustenburg, are ready to roll out. We have already commenced with the initial stages of this piloting of the automated fare ticketing system using Sunrail as a clearing hub chair. And on the ARPAS, the first batch of ARPAS regulations have been churned out from CARCOM, and they are now being going to our executive authority for concurrence. And we will be moving with the second batch of these regulations to ensure that maybe before the end of this financial year, we can address all issues that are impacting on the general aviation in terms of where we are. Chair, on the environmental protection, I just want to limit my commentary to the issue of road freight to rail. The agenda has been addressed through the development of the approved road freight strategy and its implementation plan. And to this regard, Chair, a migration plan that we are developing in consultation with DPE and Transnet assess, amongst others, the infrastructure readiness. Is our infrastructure ready to accept the amount of freight that we want to move from road to rail? And is the 10% that we have targeted ourselves feasible over the next 2 years, taking into consideration the readiness of infrastructure? The condition and determination of these commodities is another criteria element, including the quantities that we can be able to move between now and the end of this financial year. It's also important to highlight that taking these into consideration, we can also report that in 2019, we reported that around 6.1 million tons had already been shifted from road to rail. As we're speaking now, Chair, that market share has been lost. We are now, it has decreased to 5.3 million tons, mainly due to the effects of COVID. But we have kept the 10% target share, but we are talking to DPE and we are talking to the Transnet as to whether the condition of the migration plan in terms of the infrastructure readiness, which should be at the fore, will then dictate whether the 10% is feasible going forward. So this is a target that we have that we continue to work with DPE under these difficult conditions, but we remain resolute from a policy perspective that we cannot ignore the need for us to remove rail-friendly cargo from the roads of South Africa to address 2 points. One is to ensure that we alleviate the carriage of such on the roads of South Africa, which were not designed mainly to carry that type of weight. And secondly, to also talk to our implementation of the green transport strategy, which moves at reducing the emissions of transport, which has been identified as one of the four high emission emitting sectors in the country, to ensure that we reduce as per our target of 25%. Chair, the last part of our presentation will talk to the performance information. We'll talk to the governance indicators, and I'm just going to touch on three of those for the benefit of the committee. The vacancy rate of the department is impacted on by a number of issues. One, it's filling of positions that are vacant, addressing the issues of retirements and transfer out of the department. In this current financial year, we've moved at pace to fill 61 vacant positions, mainly at SMS level, and also including DDGs and chief directors. Some of these appointments were on the basis of internal promotions. And we've also recorded a number of transfers into the department, but the negative movements also out of the department, retirements, and also on the colleagues who became deceased and also created deals. Currently, we are sitting at 24.7%, and this is based on the establishment that includes both funded and unfunded positions. In terms of unfunded, on the funded positions only, our vacancy rate sits at 16.2. However, we base our vacancy rate on the whole establishment that entails both the funded and unfunded, so that we can work around making sure that we prioritize what should remain in the establishment, and maybe review our structure to ensure that we keep only those that we need in the structure. And our target of decreasing that to 10% and below remains our target within this particular MTSF. And we will continue to move at pace to ensure that we do that. And mainly to touch on the main issues as we conclude on performance information, Chair, I just want to touch on the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and also touch on irregular expenditure and unauthorized expenditure, Chair. On the issue of wasteful and fruitless expenditure, as at March 2019, Chair, we were sitting on 58 cases of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And they amounted to a combined 151,000 rands. By December 2021, only 47 cases remained in the register, and they amounted to 68,561,000 Chair. It is also important to highlight, Chair, that currently we had about 9 new cases that were reported in the 2020-21 financial year, and out of those 9, Chair, we had about 1 that was transferred to debt, and about 8 that has been transferred to debt, and 1 that has been written off, Chair. Most of these new cases, Chair, are as a result of no shows that aligned to travel. What we are doing in this regard is to strengthen our internal controls to ensure that where transgressions are as a result of negligence by internal our officials, then consequence management is then effected. In this case, we can safely say that about 8 of them that has been transferred to debt are as a result of that particular consequence management space. With regard to irregular expenditure, we have not reported irregular expenditure in the current financial year, but just to highlight that there are 8 cases that are currently under assessment through our internal control division and in consultations with an internal audit. And at the end of this financial year, and then also taking consideration the audit that's upcoming, we'll be able to confirm as to whether there is a potency to any one of them coming onto the register. But as at where we are now, they are still under assessment. In terms of unauthorized expenditure, to date, in this current financial year, we have not reported any case of unauthorized expenditure. Also, as my last point before we introduce through you, Chair, the CFO, to talk through the budget, is just to highlight that on all the governance indicators, they are in the Minister's Silver Agreement. We take them very seriously as a sector. All our entities are reporting on them on a biannual basis, and as a result, we are building on so that the portfolio can report an unqualified audit report on with no material findings, and it's not only limited to the Department of Transport, but is extended to the whole portfolio. And with analysis, we'll be able to see how far we can go in this financial year, and also address the deficiencies in specific entities where we feel that we need to intervene through our entity oversight, strengthened entity oversight approach. Chair, through your indulgence, if you can allow me, Chair, to just move quickly to the slides of the CFO, so that you can just go through the budget. And the other parts of the APP and the consolidated indicators that track our performance that we track from the entities and from the programs are also in the presentation, and we are going to consider them as read, so that we can just present at a high level what we have changed in the strat plan and what we'll be looking at in the APP going forward. Thank you, Chair. Through you, I can then hand over to the CFO.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I like your name. Do they call you Bosa or Busa or Boza?
It's Busa Bosile, Chair. So I just reserved my name is Bosa, and the other part of Bosile is reserved by somebody else. Thank you, Chair.
Oh, thank you very much. The CFO. And that day, Ramanzi has taken almost everything. I wish you to bring the reins to me at 25 past at the latest, so that we can engage with this presentation. Otherwise, it will be useless to have a presentation without engagement. Over to you.
Greetings, Chairperson and the members of the Portfolio Committee. I'll just switch on the camera for the introduction, and then I will switch off the camera so that I can continue with the presentation to not to affect the bandwidth. And greetings again to the Honorable Minister and Deputy Minister, Chairperson, and Honorable Members of both committees. The first slide, Chairperson, if you look at it there, you can see that it shows that our budget is 69.1 billion for the new year of 2022-2023, with a breakdown there of the particular branches. I will not go through them, but I want to go to the slide with the economic classification. Next slide, please, where you can see that 98% of our budget goes to the provinces, where you see that the economic line called transfers and subsidies is 67 billion, which translate into 98% of the budget. Therefore, only about 2% remains in the department, which is for compensation of employees, and then also as for the goods and services. I think as my colleague was presenting the APP, you could see that a lot of work of the department is done through our provinces and our entities. Hence, the focus to make sure that that information is translated and reported centrally at the for the sector in the department. So therefore, you can see that a lot of M&E effort is put on what is being transferred to our provinces as well as our entities. Next slide is talking to that in the over the medium term, the department will focus on intensifying its effort to improve mobility and access to social and economic activities by cultivating an enabling environment for the maintenance of the national the provincial road networks and the improvement and integration of the road-based public transport services and the modernization of the passenger rail infrastructure and the improving of those services. Our expenditure is expected to increase at an annual rate of 7.7% from 65.4 billion to 81.7 billion in the year 2024-25. This is mainly allocated to transfers and subsidies and to other spheres of government and the departmental entities, which account for 98% of its planned expenditure over the medium-term budget. If I could proceed to the next slide where we talk about the compensation of employees, this one has remained stagnant over the medium term with an annual increase of only 0.8% or almost 1% from 542 to 555 in the year 2024 and 2025. We have also an amount of 11.2 million which has been allocated in the financial year to augment the shortfall arising from salary adjustment as part of the public sector wage agreement and settlement. The spending on goods and services is expected to increase at an average rate of 11.4% from 8,851 million in 2021-22, and this will increase, especially for the funding of the maritime pollution prevention for the tugboats via a PPP procurement process, which is assisted by the National Treasury, where we'll have a unitary by the 23-24 financial year, which will be utilized to cover the shortfall that will allow for the viability of the proposed public-private partnership that will see the acquisition of new tugboats in monitoring of our ocean spaces in the western and eastern and in the southern places of our country coastline. The next slide, Chairperson, is just a graphical highlight of the compensation of employees, showing that it's almost remained stagnant, especially in the final two years of the MTSF. On the next slide is talking to our goods and services, just to highlight some of our main cost drivers in our goods and services budget. In the next slide, please, where you can see that we have got the first item there, watch keeping services. You have got your oil pollution prevention services. You have got the SACA accident and incident. Those are some of the main cost drivers. And we have got also in the public transport space, the taxi scraping administration, the grant monitoring, the NLTIS, and the implementation of the Shova Galula. Those are some of the few cost drivers that we want to highlight to the committees. Then we've got also the next slide, as indicated, shows you our transfers to the various sectors, starting with the provincial road maintenance, going down with public transport operation grant, public transport network grant, rural road asset management grant, just to mention some few of them. Then you'll see the allocation to PRASA, to SANRAL, and other public entities, how much they get per the medium-term period, per Chairperson. In the public transport, you've got the allocation for PRASA, for PTNG and PTOG, and those are the graphical view of all the transfers that we are doing in the medium-term period, Chairperson. Just to touch base, my colleague touched a lot on these particular issues. I will not go into the next slide, please. Next slide. We have done the issue of PRASA and the PTNG. Next slide, where we talk about just a little bit narrative on the public transport transfers, where we have realized that the passenger rail network has been seen a rapid deterioration in the previous years as part of recognizing that the recovery is key to providing affordable, safe and reliable public transport services. Transfers to PRASA in the rail transport program account to an estimated amount of 27.1%, which is 62.7 billion of the department budget over the medium term. This fund will be used to focus on repairs, maintenance as part of the agency's rolling stock fleet renewal program and improve security. As a result, capital transfers to the agency are expected to increase at an average rate of 11.5% from 9.7 billion to 13.5 billion in the year 2024-25. The operational transfers are expected to increase by more than an average of 4.3% from 6.9 billion to 7.9 billion in the year 2024-25. The transfers to the public transport network grant is set to increase at an annual average of 14.3% from 5.2 billion to 7.7 billion in the outer year. The public transport operating grant, which subsidizes bus services in provinces, is increasing from 7.1 billion to 7.7 billion at an annual rate of 2.8%. Then if we go to the next slide, it's highlighting the allocation to SANRAL and the provincial road maintenance grant. You can see the allocation of the provinces as well as our entity. If we go to the next slide, just a brief summary on this allocation is that the road maintenance backlog has grown over the years, partly due to the shifting of funds from non-toll routes to more economically viable toll roads. To support the national road backlog network of 76.4 billion, this goes to South African National Road Agency. And then we've got also a 116.1 billion over the medium term, which is allocated to the road transport program to construct, upgrade, and maintain the national and provincial road network. Over the MTF, period, 5.9% of 45.3 billion of the allocation to the SANRAL is allocated to maintain the national non-toll road network, and 2.8 billion is allocated for the route 573, the Moloto Road Development Corridor, and 3.7 billion to the N2 Wild Coast Project, and the 2.1 billion is allocated to fund reduced tariff for the GF project. Transfers to the agency account to 33.5% of the departmental budget over the EMTF period and 65.5% of the budget of the road transport program. And then an amount of 37.4 billion over the MTF period is allocated to the PRMG for the provinces are expected to use the grant to rehabilitate 8277 lane of kilometers, resin 11217 lane kilometers, regravel 16605 kilometers, and the black top patch of 5.4 million square meters. Factors such as condition of roads, weather patterns, and traffic volume grant allocation for the maintenance of the provincial road. Now the following slide, with your indulgence, I'll take them as read. They give us a breakdown of the allocations to our provinces. Next slide. It is for the public transport operating grant is for the municipalities as indicated. You can see allocation of all the municipalities. And lastly, the public transport network grant also the allocation per city that are participating in this particular program. And that gives us the budget allocation to our entities, the provinces and the municipalities through our transfers and subsidies. Thank you, Chairperson. That is the budget allocation for the department.
is my co-chair still on the platform? Ramazwani? Honorable members, looks like the chair will be more good. Yeah, the floor is yours, chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. That was quite a marathon kind of a presentation. Let me check if we still have people in the room here. Noting the question that was asked before, I'm sure the department still has it. That one related to the manufacturing of new driver's licenses from honorable team. I'm sure we'll get a response from that. I have two hands at the moment. Maybe I should start first by what the honorable member Noluthando wants me to say. She says I should ask this question that you said you are on track in restoring the line from Langa to Belleville and Langa to Phillip. Can you give us time frames, please, and also share with the portfolio committee of course, because this is a shared joint meeting, recommendation that you have made to the cabinet regarding this matter. The second question from Honorable Nolchungu is, CBRTA board term expired in 2019. RTMC and AXA board terms expired also. Why is it that after almost 3 years, new board members have not been appointed? The third one is the 75 new trains that you spoke of, will they accommodate level boarding for wheelchair users? And the last one is, there has been reports in the media alleging that the continued extension of the PARCO subsidized service by the Gauteng Department of Roads and Transport was illegal. Is it true? If not, please give us the correct version. That was Meno Luchungu Nontando. I'm sure I've asked, let me see here. You mentioned that the pilot for the integrated taxi system is being implemented. Where is this implemented? In which mode of transport? I hope that was the last from Meno Luchungu. And let's take other honorable members. Honorable Makosini, Honorable MD, Honorable Chris Unsinga, Honorable Tim, and Honorable Peter Mayer, and lastly, Chair, you'll be the banana sweeper of this session. Thank you. In that order, please. Baba Makosini, followed by Honorable McD, followed by Honorable Tim, followed by Honorable Hunsinga, and then the co-chair will be the last. In that order, please. Okay, Honorable Makosini may be having problems. Honorable McDonald?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Mangete. Good morning, Honorable Members, Department of Transport, Ministers, Deputy Minister. Chairperson, I'm not going to put my video on where I am. I don't have a stable signal.
So I would just, I'm going to leave it off. So, Chairperson, on the issue of PRASA, just there's no indication on the Pietermaritzburg to Durban PRASA rail line. I would like some more clarity on that, because the congestion on the roads between Pietermaritzburg and Durban is so severe in the mornings and the afternoons. And this was, we need to get this trains up and running. I mean, honestly. Then, you know, Chairperson, we keep on
being told,
Chairperson, should I wait, and or should I wait for Honourable Makosini to stop, finish?
No, let me proceed, please, because I'm having a problem.
Okay.
Can you allow me to proceed, because I'm having a problem with regard to networking?
Okay, proceed. Sorry, Honourable MacDonald.
Thank you very much. Chairperson, I've got a lot of questions, but I'll reserve others for other members. In terms of your plan, you said you have employed about 2,000 permanent security guards at all stations, only to find that you have just installed the marshals with air. How are you, just to have installed the marshals, how far are you with the employment of security guards? Because this is itself is a job creation. Two, most of the stations, especially at the locations, were vandalized and dysfunctional because of cable theft and negligence. Are all stations functional as I speak? Three, the road fatalities, do you really follow the money you have allocated to provinces? You have alluded to the fact that 98% of your budget goes to the provinces. I'm saying this because we are recently from oversight in Northwest, Mpumalanga, and KwaZulu-Natal. What we have seen there is a shame, if not as a disaster. What do you do to curb this maladministration? Why don't you take people to custody instead of suspending and withdrawing money for the projects that have collapsed? Four, the reduction of fatal accidents by 50%. Do you not attribute this to COVID-19, because motorists were not allowed to move from one province to another? At one stage, people were not allowed even to drink. Thank you, Chairperson. Those are my questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ngwane. Thank you very much. Let's proceed, Honorable Mbe.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start from the beginning. On the PRASA line between Pietermaritzburg and Durban, it's a critical line for the decongestion of traffic in that area. I see that there's no plans on this APP to get that line up and running, Chairperson. Also, with the current states of the roads in KwaZulu-Natal, it's very important that we get the vehicles off the roads and get the mass mover, the trains back on track so that we can accommodate the poorest of the poor. Chairperson, you know, every presentation we get from the department, there's some sort of innuendo that the trains and the infrastructure of PRASA was, the cause was COVID. Chairperson, we have to be honest here, and we have to, you know, honesty is a very good policy. Chairperson, the reason why the stations and the infrastructure of PRASA was looted and destroyed was the removal of the security guards and the department and PRASA's inability to get security onto the stations and the platforms and the infrastructure of PRASA. It's got nothing to do with COVID. Yes, COVID gave an opportunity to people to take the things, but it's because of a lack of security on the stations and the infrastructure of Praza that we are in the trouble that we are today. Going to the roads, the provincial roads, Chairperson, we've just been on oversight and we've crossed a couple of provinces. It's unbelievable how the roads are deteriorating. And the, having a talk shop and a min-mec to this, just to discuss this, to wait on some months from now, by the time that there's a decision, there's going to be nothing left of the roads and no roads for South Africans to travel on. And that means no growth in the economy, no growth in rural sectors, no business in rural sectors, and a loss of thousands of people's jobs. Chairperson, the department must take us seriously for a change. They must take the people of South Africa seriously, Chairperson. We can't continue this to having talk shops about problems that we have. Nobody can even drive on certain roads anymore. It's a problem. There's just been, on Sunrise Road on the N2, there's been three accidents because they put up barriers where the road is, part of it's been destroyed on the N2. But they never put signs on to reduce the speed of the traffic. There's been fatal accidents on that road. Coming back to the license machine, Chairperson, we were there on oversight. We were told on oversight in 2019 that the machine is about to break. There's no more ink for this machine. It's on its last legs. Now the department's telling us that it was a flooding situation next to us. So either the department is lying or the people that runs the machine is lying, but somebody is lying to somebody here. And I would like to have an answer on that. On the single ticketing system that they want to roll out in Mangaung and Rustenburg, single ticketing system for what? There's no buses running there. That IPTN is not even close to running. Those things are so far from running, it's unbelievable. We just came from Rustenburg. There's one station completed. They are not... The depot is not completed. Nothing is running there. In Bloemfontein, the roads have not been finished. The buses are not running. Chairperson, I mean, take us seriously for a change, please. Thank you. Through you, Chairperson, that's my questions and my comments. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Lawrence McDonald, Honorable Tim Brayton. What is the right surname? I want to pronounce it properly.
Thank you, Chair, for your consideration. It's Brautaset.
Brautaset.
That's correct.
Thanks, and Honorable Brautaset.
Thank you.
You can carry on.
It's a difficult Norwegian name.
Wow, no, but I've got it.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. Chair, yeah, just to reiterate what I was asking earlier, and then just one other question, if I may. Okay,
yes.
So to break it up into simple pieces for the officials to respond. The current license card, question number one, what is wrong with the format of that card? Does it have flaws? Is it easy to duplicate? Does it have security issues? And why do we need to change the format of that card? That's question number one. Question number two, when Honorable Browder said goes to a licensing department and hands in his eye test, does his fingerprints, hands in his proof of address, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and that is all then captured onto a software package and then gets sent for printing, at the point before it goes for printing, why can that not be produced digitally and uploaded onto a simple app,
mm-hmm.
which people can download on their phones and have the digital license on their phones?
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand why that is a problem. It doesn't take long. Youngsters develop apps in a matter of weeks. But we are now being told. So the context of this, Chair, is we've been told that the new license card, which we're not clear on why there has to be a new license card, a new format, is only going to be ready in 2025. We were also informed that Cabinet hasn't signed off on it yet, unless that's changed in the past few weeks since we last met with that entity. And then the digitization, the license card on your phone will only become a reality in 2025 or 2024. And so the question is, why on earth is that taking so long? But if you go back to the first question, why is there a need for a change? And that's what we'd like to have clarification on. The second question, Chair, relates to, and I know this is difficult for the department because the floods have caused a major disruption, but I have to represent my province as I'm in the National Council of Provinces. What money has been set aside to assist the Itigwini Municipality and others in KZN and the Provincial Department of Transport to getting roads fixed as soon as possible in the KZN region? Reason being, Chairs, we're not just talking about roads that are an inconvenience. We are talking about roads that are main tributaries to areas that have literally cut off areas. There are areas now that literally cannot do the most mundane thing of going to the shop and getting supplies. They have to climb through ravines and use ladders and that sort of thing. So I'd just like to know what amount or budget of the department is an emergency amount is going to be set aside, and what technical skills, et cetera, are being given to provincial and municipalities to help them overcome this really pressing challenge right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Breda said. Honorable Chris Hunsinger, very good afternoon, sir, please.
Good afternoon, Chairperson. Chairperson, I've got five questions. Firstly, just on a issue of clarity, I've written down a couple of words which the presenter seems to be very fond of, and these were that a particular issue would be expanded on more, a particular issue would be extended on comprehensively, other issues would be intensified by efforts, and then to cover it all, you know, he talks of optimized focus. Now, I don't think it's fair to mention this without giving detail, because this is what this portfolio committee is all about. The more detail we get on these more and comprehensiveness and efforts and focuses, the better we are equipped then to deal with these. And I would submit that it's been rather vague on detail, and let me give you some examples. First, one in terms of accuracy, slide 54, is it possible to get that slide, Chairperson? Chairperson, are you there? The slide number was slightly covered by a copy and paste. Could it be 34? There we go, that one. Yes, thank you very much. Chairperson, in the third column, you will notice that the baseline indicated for March 2019 indicates a total network in 2019 of 25,253 kilometers, whereas the baseline for a December 2021 is less, 22,262. If I just can get that explained, it would be interesting why there's a loss of network indicated here in terms of distance. My third point, Chairperson, is one on rail safety. What is the current situation on insurance, short-term insurance, which covers the liability of losing railway assets? Do we have insurance at this stage? And why isn't this a key performance indicator in terms of attaining and regaining insurance, since this is a core component of assuring our commuters of safety?
In a presentation or two before a chairperson, we were told that there is a major issue with storage facilities for new trains. And I would have seen, I would have liked to see this also as a key performance indicator, so that at least we have the assurance that trains have facilities for storage. My last point, chairperson, is on the BRT. I was rather disappointed to hear that the recovery plan for the municipalities of Mbombela, Umzinduzi and Buffalo City that have been suspended, that it's modeled on an indication of what the population is, an indication of how many potential passenger trips there would be. These are figures and numbers which you can get from Wikipedia. Chairperson, the failure of these three municipalities, and I would have added Rustenburg, but the failure of these three municipalities is that they have spent billions and there's nothing to show. In other words, the contingency there is and should be around management improvement and how they address the particular debility that led to the suspension. So therefore, I'm rather disappointed to hear what the recovery plan criteria is, and that the indicators are rather diverted from what it should be. Thank you, Chairperson.
Enkosi kakhulu, Mhlobo wa. Enkosi kakhulu. Thank you very much, Honorable Onsinga. I want to give to the chair, co-chair, to also ask some questions. Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, for giving me the opportunity. Let me also welcome the presentation from the acting DG and the team. It's Chair, my question is linked to the concern that has been raised by fellow honorable members on the rural roads in provinces and municipalities, particularly their status. But more than that, this question is prompted by the fact that all these 3 years of government are a creature of statute, and that the constitution spells out the responsibilities of National Department of Transport in relation to the concurrency, together with the province, which is both, I think, schedule 5A and 4A. But more than that, local government also has a particular role to play with regard to transport in relation to 4B. Considering this different functions as given to the 3 years, I'm more concerned about the efficiency and the effectiveness of coordination from the department side, particularly with regard to the implementation of its responsibilities, which is mainly centered around setting the scene in terms of policy parameters. Yes. And I'm raising this point, particularly given the concerns that have been raised. To what extent can the department, national department, intervene without necessarily usurping the functions that necessarily belongs to it, which squarely falls within the scope of the provincial Department of Transport and the local government transport ambit, so that we are then able to ensure that we effectively intervene where it is necessary. I'll cite an example, R31 in Northern Cape, from Kuruma to Kimberley, which is an important road in terms of the slowness around the program of from road rail, because that road specifically deals with it's always congested with trucks transporting manganese from the Kalahari manganese basin to PE and also to Saldanha, and therefore for the last two years it has been a crisis, but with the last two to three weeks the situation became worse. To the extent that those trucks and transport had to be diverted. Hence the question is the efficiency and effectiveness of the coordination structures that we have at the level of the MEC, the MINMEC, but more than that, the room that the department has, particularly with regards to forging ahead with the rural routes. We have seen, you made reference to Moloto, you have made reference to Wild Coast, but I think the situation is dire across many provinces. How effective and efficient within the ambit of the powers and functions of this 3CS can the department be able to intervene? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Co-Chair. I am left with 8 minutes on the dot. I do not think that the department will be able to answer questions on 5 minutes or so. Am I allowed by the joint committee to request the department instead to respond in this on these questions in writing in 7 days? Is that possible, acting Director General?
Thank you, Chair. It is quite possible, Chair, that we can respond within 7 days back to the committee on the questions that have been asked. And it also affords us an opportunity, because there are also very technical questions that requires us to align with the implementing agencies, especially when it comes to PRASA, so that we can be able to provide fully researched and accurate information to the members of these committees. So we will really appreciate that opportunity, Chair. Thank you very much.
Valerie, am I correct that was scheduled up until 1 o'clock today?
That's correct, Chairperson.
Okay. Honorable members, I think unfortunately, we wouldn't have an opportunity where we'll interact live with the responses from the department. Nevertheless, we should be able to get responses trickling in from next week. It means a week after next week, we should be able to raise an issue if members have not got responses in writing. Let me hear closing remarks from the co-chair before I give my own closing remarks. 2 minutes, closing remarks, chair, if you have.
No, chair. I'm happy because I did the opening remarks, so I'm happy to allow my co-chair to give the closing remarks. Thank you, chair.
Thank you very much. We are building a solid working relationship between the two committees, of which is highly appreciated. Let me take this opportunity and really thank all the members from both committees for their productive participation and manner in which they posed questions. I wish that we should follow up on the questions that were raised. I would still also want to hear from my side, for an example, why in this day and age are we not gravitating towards a license that can be actually digitalized, as Honorable Breda Sand has actually said. We have heard the bad state of roads, especially rural roads. I don't want to be provincialized as the chair, but there are provinces that are bad. And I'm sure as you consider your allocation, let's not take time. Honorable McDee has raised the point really that as much as we are encouraged by the meetings that have said, MINMEC meetings, we want action because that's what is demanded from the ground. Otherwise, there will be no roads, there will be no economy. And if there are no roads, there are no economy, why should we be in existence? So I think let's get those detailed responses in 7 days. Otherwise, from my side, thank you very much for participating in this meeting, and until we meet again. And thank you very much, chair, on your side, for assisting to chair this meeting. It was really a smooth process, and we look forward to collaborating on issues of mutual interest and in the benefit of the people of South Africa. Thank you very much. This meeting is officially closed. Thank you.
Long live the chair. Long live.
Long live the
recording stopped.
Long live.